Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
610, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Steve has bronchitis. Hopefully he'll be back in the saddle tomorrow. Andrea's here. Mary's here. Everybody's back here except Dave Ennett, who's also sick.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out if they had any sort of weekend in the Dells together or whatnot. I don't think so. But
did they vacation together?
I don't think
over
so.
Over the holiday.
You know, we were at the comedy show. Steve had the two comedy shows on New Year's Eve, and Ennett and I were supposed to meet at the first show, and he texted me about an hour before. He's like, I don't think I'm going to make it. I have the flu.
When Dave Ennett is sick, something's wrong.
Yeah. Oh, big time.
Yeah.
He's very healthy.
So Andy Mazur's sitting in today. We got bowl games to talk about a little bit
later. We do.
Wow, that was some fun football yesterday.
Rose Bowl, the granddaddy of them all.
Some stories that we're following this morning. Chicago police officer shot and killed his neighbor after an argument ensued. Superintendent Eddie Johnson says he has more questions than answers. Allegedly, the Chicago police officer has shown his gun in the past during arguments.
Yeah, this is a really crazy story. This is the second Chicago police-involved shooting in the past 2 days. This officer, the family spoke last night, which is unique. You know, the family of the victims usually don't speak out. The father and the aunt were speaking out, saying that this officer, he lived in the same complex as this 38-year-old victim. This was Jose Nieves. They lived in the same complex, and that didn't come out until after the fact. I guess initially they thought that there was just this encounter between the police officer and the guy walking down the street who was with his girlfriend. The girlfriend says he was unarmed, that the officer approached them and kind of started, you know, this argument, this one-on-one with the victim, shot him twice in the front and then once in the back as he tried to turn and run. So that's why Eddie Johnson is saying there's more questions than answers.
And this coming on the heels of the Chicago Police Department being featured on 60 Minutes on Sunday night. Now, if you lived out of town and saw that feature on 60 Minutes talking about the murders and the shootings, would you ever come to Chicago?
Not at all. When I saw it, Tupete, I thought Chirac. And I hate that term. I hate when that's used about the city of Chicago. But yeah, it was not good. And my first thought was, if I'm not from Chicago, why am I watching the former police superintendent as opposed to the current one speak out about the issues?
Gary McCarthy was on. Eddie Johnson did have some sound bites, but he didn't really have any answers.
He didn't really. He didn't. And at this point, what can you say?
Yeah.
You know,
we can't say anything. We're just trying.
Yeah. And he's unveiling a couple of new policies this week that he says will help. A couple might even end up in Springfield, these proposals for tougher gun laws, but more police accountability. And those new body cams are going to be here sometime this month, too.
Okay.
And by the end of this year, 2017, every police patrol officer will have a body cam.
Speaking of Springfield, new year, no new budget.
Yeah, no new budget. How
about
that?
What's going on with this state?
They have another stopgap that's going to last 6 months. And we had Pat Brady on every Thursday we usually have him on. But he said late last year, they're going to keep doing this. They'll do a six-month, then a six-month, and then a six-month. And the real losers in this, Pete, are the social service agencies, the domestic violence shelters, the homeless shelters, the shelters that can't stay open.
What's their incentive to sign a budget? If you're Michael Madigan, there is no incentive.
No, there's no incentive.
He's just going to hold out.
It's a stronghold. It's a stronghold.
The president farewell speech is happening next week in Chicago. And the ticket situation is very sketchy. You have to go. It's going to be at McCormick Place, right?
Right.
Where is it going to be held at McCormick Place?
That's a really good question.
I don't really understand. They keep saying it's going to be at McCormick Place, but where?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting because for Hillary Clinton, on election night, they had her election night at the Javits Center, which is very similar to McCormick Place. It's a convention center, but they had all the big rooms closed off, and they had her kind of in this little area, if you will. You know, like if you can picture the auto show, it was where, say, the Chevy display would be.
Right.
It was all curtained
off.
So I think they might do that with Obama, too, only not that small. They're going to open up a showroom, or they might even have it on that staged area. But they're being very quiet about it for security reasons.
What do we have, 7-8 million people in Chicago in the suburbs, right?
Yeah, 3 in Chicago alone, and then, seven proper.
How many tickets?
It doesn't say how many tickets they're going to give away, but you have to wait in line to get it.
You have to go down to McCormick Place, right?
On Saturday.
To get your ticket.
Right.
Who has time to do that? My son's got a basketball game. I'd love to see the president in real life, but I can't do that.
They're free but you have to go in person, and it's one ticket per person.
Right.
You can't go and say, I need four.
And where do you park? You have to pay for parking down at McCormick Place? That's right. $35.
Oh, easily. There's no parking unless you park there.
Oh, and the Mariah Carey thing won't go away.
Yeah,
did you watch this on Saturday night? I saw it. I watched it two or three times on video. It's not as bad as everybody is saying.
No.
Okay. The music's playing. She's just talking to the crowd. It's not that bad.
I don't think if she drew as much attention to it, we would have known that much. But she just kept saying, walk me down. I can't hear anything.
Where's my monitors?
Yeah.
Yes. And then during the chorus, you could hear her recorded voice.
Yeah.
Right.
So she was going to sing over a track and then get some help with her voice during the chorus.
Right.
But apparently it didn't work.
But
she couldn't hear herself.
We heard all the behind-the-scenes stuff, too. Walk me down. Just keep going with it.
It's like, why call attention? You're just right. Go on.
Well, what are you supposed to do if you can't hear yourself?
You're a professional.
I don't know. If you get used to it over the years, you want to hear yourself in your ear. It's like doing radio. We wear headphones.
Yeah.
Think about if you couldn't wear headphones.
Okay. Right. So for one time,
well, the,
you can't gut it out?
Everybody in the United States is watching her, so she doesn't want to blow it.
Yeah, I would have just kept dancing, kept going,
right. Just
I
moving
can't
around.
Dance, but
the real issue is it's not the lip syncing, and I think all women are beautiful. Okay, all women, but Mariah wears ill fitting clothes.
Yeah, I agree.
What was she wearing? She was wearing a leotard,
a onesie.
I don't get it.
and she's got the nylons hiked all the way up.
Yes.
Again, I could never pull this look off ever.
Well, she can't pull it off anymore.
Not
if you're in your
TV.
20s, you know, but come on.
Right.
It really drew some serious attention to it. And the feathers, wasn't that weird, too? It was kind of like that
Debbie
yes. Reynolds,
yeah.
What was that, White Christmas kind of with the feathers going around her.
Right.
She had to step out of that. Kind of the poop.
Yeah, the clothes really get me. I mean, Madonna does that, too. Madonna wears ill-fitting clothes now. What is she, 58?
Oh, she's, I think, older than that.
She shouldn't be wearing those.
How old is Madonna? She's in her 60s, I would say.
She's already hit the 6-0.
Oh, she's 58. You're right.
Oh.
She's got the bod, though, you know? She does.
Yeah, but you're a mom. You have teenagers. You can't wear that stuff anymore.
Oh, no.
That's very odd.
Especially how she wears it with the handcuffs. And
yeah.
The
that's bad.
It's dirty. It's how do you talk to your teenage boy about that?
My 4-year-old goddaughter yesterday said, is creep a bad word? I said, well, yeah, if you call someone that, but you can say someone's creepy. Like the way Madonna dresses. Forget it. Just don't even ask.
Don't worry about it, kid.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
A modern form of communication between Facebook and Twitter, and I guess Instagram. I have 28 million people. It's a great form of communication. Now, I'm not saying I love it, but it does get the word out.
WGN. Donald Trump tweeting to the mayor of Chicago yesterday, saying Chicago murder rate is record-setting, 4,331 shooting victims with 762 murders in 2016. If mayor can't do it, he must ask for federal help. Now, I've always said, if you want to say something about me, tell it to my face. I don't understand the tweet yesterday. On the phone with us, or joining us from ABC News, it's Brad Mielke. Brad, this is going to happen throughout his presidency, isn't it?
Yeah, clearly Donald Trump does not seem averse to tweeting his thoughts on things. And what's troubling about it, what's difficult about it, is that 140 characters is not always enough to get out exactly what you're thinking. And it's because Donald Trump has not held a press conference since being elected, defies modern history, the length of time it's been. Really, the only window you get into his thought process is through his Twitter handle. And that's why we had this statement from the mayor's office that seemed kind of befuddled. It seems to sort of say, Rahm Emanuel has spoken with the president-elect. They've spoken about federal help. Chicago would like to use federal dollars in some of the programs it's trying to get here. And very little answer back from the incoming Trump administration.
So I think to myself, what is his motive sending out this tweet? Is he trying to communicate with the Chicago people? Or is it just his thought process?
Well,
all right, I watched 60 Minutes. I need to say something to Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, well, you heard him in that clip you played earlier saying you know, how many followers he has, what a great tool it is to connect with all those followers. And that is who he's speaking to in these, is his followers, the people who voted for him. He considers that sort of his pro-Trump community online. And so generally, that is who you sort of get the impression that he's speaking to, the people who agree with him, sort of rallying the troops behind him. The question is, how is he going to deal with everyone else, right? How is he going to deal with the larger populace of Chicago or Illinois? And for that, you usually rely on press conferences. Donald Trump seems very, very sort of satisfied to lead that to sort of internet speak.
Brad, I always thought communication was an exchange of information, but I think Trump sees it a different way. Mm-hmm. Again, yeah, Chicago has asked for federal help. I kind of took it more of as a slam. Like, he had seen the interview, he heard about the shootings, the combined number of New York and LA, and just had to kind of take a shot at Chicago, which I don't quite understand. But do you think he'll continue to do this once he takes office?
Oh, I think absolutely. And the reason is because, A, 70-year-old men don't often change over the course of a month or two. But B, and more importantly, is that, you know, throughout this sort of post-election haze, we've seen very little change about Donald Trump, whether it was about Twitter or sort of about his view towards the press. His incoming press secretary, Sean Spicer, says, yeah, a lot of things are going to change. A lot of the norms that you are used to in the media are going to change under this administration. Ask for specifics. Not a whole lot has been given, but it doesn't seem as if Donald Trump is going to put down his phone and stop tweeting anytime.
Brad, this is what makes me nervous. Let's say Russia does something or ISIS does something. I feel like he's fueling the fire if he tweets something out.
Well, and which just in the last 24 hours, I mean, right after that tweet about Chicago, he also put out a tweet about North Korea, sort of did some trash talking, said it won't happen when talking about their intercontinental ballistic missile system, and then threw China under the bus, saying that China hasn't done its part in sort of reining in North Korea. Now, you know, China and North Korea, not traditionally allies of the U.S., but it gives you the sense that even before he's taken the oath of office, before he's the commander-in-chief, he already feels very comfortable sort of publicly slamming people without the input of other Republicans, of people in the State Department. I mean, he considers this his platform, and he wants to have the first say on it.
Maybe it's good that he doesn't go to the security briefings.
Well, he's getting one. He's getting one either today or tomorrow, so we'll see.
I can't imagine what his advisors are saying after he sends out a tweet, because you know he's not consulting with anyone.
Well, here's the frustrating part, too, is, you know, you talked about an exchange of information. We will ask for clarification on some of these tweets, right? And a lot of people in his office will say, well, the tweet speaks for itself. On the other hand, they're also saying that they get misinterpreted by the media so often. Donald Trump complains that he doesn't get the fair treatment by the media because people sort of mangle his words. Well, when you only have 140 characters, there's got to be some interpretation there. And that is what his administration so far has been very unwilling to give.
Position yourself as the underdog and people will back you. He does that with the media.
That's true. And he continually says that he is sort of the victim of this larger establishment, whether we're talking about Capitol Hill, which he talked a lot about that, you know, going in the midst of the campaign. And he's continued talking about him in regards to the media as a sort of victim of these larger forces that don't want to see him in power.
Here's something to think about. The first 100 days, he has his agenda, of course. If people don't if they don't comply, he's going to throw people under the bus in tweets.
It's possible, yeah, and we've seen him sort of go off on individual people, and you know, whether they are allies of him, like Paul Ryan, who, you know, top Republican in Congress, Donald Trump has had several tweets about Paul Ryan, or his enemies, not just high-profile enemies, but people who maybe are a little more under the radar. He's called out by name, and again, when you say you've got 25 million people backing you up that are, you know, anxiously holding on your every word, that gets a lot of attention that a lot of those people aren't used to, and we've seen people call him outright mean because of how he handles those confrontations.
Brett, he takes over the POTUS Twitter when he is inaugurated. So will he have that and his own? Has there been any indication of that?
Yeah, it hasn't been quite clear. In fact, the current White House is not quite clear. The POTUS handle will be archived. All those tweets from President Obama over the last several years will be archived, and it will sort of start fresh with the Donald Trump presidency. But he and his team have not been clear under what name he will actually be tweeting on.
In my opinion, the president should be doing this.
I'm sorry?
He should not be doing this, the president, because I feel like he's stirring things up. If you have a problem, call the mayor of Chicago. If you have a problem, talk to someone in Russia. Don't tweet things out. If you have a problem, talk to North Korea. Well, you're not going to talk to North Korea, but talk to your foreign minister.
That's why they have press spokesmen and women.
Right. Yes. Or talk to your ambassadors.
Yeah. And so here you have what he says will be sort of a new way of handling things. And I think it makes a lot of people uncomfortable. It makes a lot of people, frankly, confused because, like you said, we just don't know a whole lot of details about what he means with all of these tweets. But I think if you're a Donald Trump fan, you're thinking, finally, somebody is saying what I personally know to be true. The difficulty is if you're somebody in the State Department or you're a congressman and you've actually got to turn these things into policy, into law, into action, you need more specifics than what Donald Trump has been handing out so far.
Brad Mielke, ABC News. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
All right. It's 720 WGN.
What to see? What's out at the show? I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on GM's Cochrane Show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
640, Star Wars, number one at the box office again over the holiday weekend. Joining us, Nick D. Nick, as a Star Wars sometimes fan, I saw the big movies. What was it, last year, the one that came out with the old actors?
Yeah.
I loved it. I haven't seen Rogue One now. Can I catch up on this storyline?
It's kind of a separate storyline. I'm going to preface this by saying that I'm not a big Star Wars fan. Never got on board with it. I should have. I was 12 when the first movie came out in the theaters. All my friends went nuts for it, but I didn't. I did like The Force Awakens, the one that came out last year.
Right.
But this one, Rogue One, is not part of that story. Those are, you know, all the chaptered stories. Force Awakens is a part of all of those. Now, this is these little offshoot movies. Well, not little, but these are the offshoot movies that Disney's going to bring out every year, in addition to doing the official chaptered Star Wars stuff. This is essentially, this takes place after Sith and before the very first one, A New Hope. It's a direct sequel before the very first Star Wars movie.
I need a chart. About,
oh, yeah, I know. You need, like, diagramming a sentence.
Right.
The idea here is that the plans that were in the R2 unit in the very first movie,
okay,
plans on how to destroy the Death Star that Princess Leia put into R2-D2. Those plans were stolen by a bunch of rebels. That's what this movie's about. The movie is about these rebels going in to steal the Death Star diagrams in order to destroy it.
What have you heard about? Carrie Fisher when she passed away last week or a week and a half ago? The first thing was Princess Leia. What's going to happen to her? But with CG nowadays, they can bring her back forever.
Well, she finished for the Chapter 8 that's coming out, which is the sequel to Force Awakens from last year. I know it gets confusing, but she had finished all her shooting. So she'll be in the film. Now, to bring that point up, in Rogue One, which Rogue One, by the way, I think is great. I think it's great. And again, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but this one, I do want to warn people. This is a very dark movie. Lots of people die in this movie. Lots of people die. And it's not like, you know, they're blown up with laser beams, you know, from space. These are like, there's ground battles in this movie. They're very intense and it's dark. And, you know, it's rated PG-13 for a reason. And I know I've seen it twice, and both times there were really inappropriately young kids in the audience. So I want to make sure people know that. But in Rogue One, there was a character that's played by the late, great Peter Cushing. He played Grand Moff Tarkin. He died in 1994. He's in the CGI and everything. He's in Rogue One four long scenes, and they've CGI'd him, and he looks exactly like Peter Cushing.
Really?
He sounds exactly like Peter Cushing. Peter Cushing is like my childhood hero, so I was kind of beside myself when I saw him, you know, moving and talking. It's weird, I know. The Cushing family was on board. They gave their blessing. They said it was okay, and it looks pretty remarkable. But I don't know if they're going to end up doing that with Carrie Fisher. I really don't. I'm not really sure. Like I said, she finished all of her shooting before she passed away for the next Star Wars movie. So she'll be in it without the CGI.
As a film purist, does the CGI bother you?
depends on its it depends on how it's used. You know, I think if you like one of the reasons why I think The Force Awakens, the last one, and this Rogue One works so well is because and the prequels didn't, like The Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, the movies that George Lucas directed, the late 90s, early 2000s, those terrible prequels, is because everything was computerized. Everything.
Yeah.
Characters, vehicles. This, they went back in Force Awakens. They used CGI, but they used sets. They built big, giant ships that were actually on set. They actually shot in deserts instead of like a fake background. So there is that tangible feeling when you watch these movies that doesn't feel nearly as artificial as it did in those prequels. So, in addition, you know, if you can work both of them in,
okay,
you know, I'm for it if you can make it work.
That makes sense.
Nick, the one that comes out at the end of this year, though, that is the continuation of the one from the last time. This has nothing. This
yes.
New one. Okay, got it.
Yes, Chapter 8. It's Chapter
got it.
8.
Okay.
And then we've got the other one that's coming out is the Han Solo prequel, which is Young Han Solo. I can't remember the actor who's playing. Oh, it was the guy who was in Hail Caesar is playing Han Solo. And Lando Calrissian, Billy Dee Williams in the original Empire and everything, is going to be Donald Glover from Atlanta.
Oh my God!
So you know.
Well, the offshoot stories. I mean, you can do any character on Star Wars, and you can just milk this thing forever.
That's when Disney bought the rights from Lucas. They looked at Marvel. And they looked at what Marvel is doing, and they said, we could have a universe of our own and just make it all Star Wars. We could release a Star Wars movie a year, sometimes two Star Wars movies a year, and we'll make millions and millions of dollars every year. And that was the plan. That was the game plan from the day that Disney bought the rights from Lucas.
Smart.
They're executing it. Yeah, that was very smart. And if they keep making good ones, the other thing is, both of the films that came out of Disney, the Star Wars movies, are both good. And this, I personally think Rogue One is better than the one from last year.
Really? Okay, now I want to see it. Ooh. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. On the phone with us, Nick D. Nick, I saw two movies over the weekend. Number one, Manchester by the Sea. Oh, my God.
Don't give anything away. Let me just say, you guys.
Nick,
I'm seeing it on Thursday.
I know Casey Affleck, I think, is going to be nominated for this, but I don't think the 16-year-old kid in that movie gets enough credit.
It is great. Everybody in it is great. Casey Affleck is—he's a shoe-in to get a nomination for it. There's no question about it. But the kid is terrific. And Michelle Williams. There's a scene late in the film between Michelle Williams and Casey Affleck that's about as devastating a scene as I've seen in a movie ever.
Oh my God! My wife was crying. Yeah. First of all, crying the entire movie, but that scene alone. Wow.
It is. Let me just say this. I think I've seen it three times. It's a film that it's crushing. You will be gutted after you see it.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to be discouraged from seeing it. It is a very, very supremely sad movie, but beautiful and insanely well acted and really well written. This is a wonderful film written by and for adults who want to see real life as messy as it is. And acted beautifully. And everybody is in it. Why am I? Kyle Chandler, who plays his brother, also fantastic.
Oh, I forgot about Kyle Chandler. He's so good and such a likable guy, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. It's a great film. Kenneth Lohgren is the director of this movie. He's a great playwright, and he explores that kind of, you know, loser guy dealing with his past. That's a theme of his in the three movies he's directed and in all the plays that he's written, and he's one of the best American playwrights alive, and it's one of my favorite films of the year, absolutely.
God, you're so right. It's such a great movie, but there's that part in the movie when you find out what happens, and you're like,
oh my God. Yeah, no, it's unbelievable.
But I was prepared. I was prepared to be depressed, and if you have that mindset where, you know, you're going to go in, it is a wonderful movie, and I highly recommend it. How about Sing? Did you like Sing? I saw Sing over the break.
Yeah.
Why didn't you like it? What was it with that movie?
I just found the characters really annoying, and it's really long for an animated movie.
Yeah,
it's like 45 minutes too long. And like by the fifth musical number, I was like, oh God. But no, it was not one of my favorites. I think the animation is really well done, as many of the modern animated movies are. So I thought a lot of the animation was great, but the characters just annoyed me. I wasn't into it, and like I said, you know, at the 6-hour mark, I was like, "What the hell is going on?"
The gorilla's father. That storyline. Why? Why did we need to have that in the movie?
Well, there's a lot of storylines in it where like, well, that's okay. Good cut, 15 minutes right there.
God, you're right. And La La Land. Everyone's talking about this. I'm not a musical guy. I don't like musicals, okay. But people keep saying, "Oh, this is different." Is it?
If you don't like musicals, Pete, you're not going to like this movie.
My husband fell asleep.
I don't know who's lying to you, Pete, but for me, listen, I've seen it 6 times.
Six?
It's, well, yeah, without question, my favorite movie of the year. I know I'm going to unveil my list on Sunday night, Monday morning on my regular show, and I'm already blowing the lead, but I don't care. I think La La Land is absolutely the best movie I've seen all year. But it's a musical. I mean, it has different elements. But there are musical numbers in it, and people break into song, and so it's a musical.
See, I love. You know, didn't you love Chicago though, and Moulin Rouge?
No.
No, I hated. I hated Moulin Rouge with every fiber of my being.
So good.
I hated that movie. Chicago, I liked. I thought the movie was. I thought the movie was really good, but I preferred the stage version. Now, here's the thing, though. The thing about La La Land is that most of the, you know, the popular movie musicals from the past few years, 10, 15 years, with the exception of Moulin Rouge, which was an original musical, most of them are based on Broadway shows, and they're adapted to film. La La Land is a movie musical. It was made for cinema. It was not adapted from the stage.
Okay.
Never on stage. It is a movie musical that uses cinema in the old-fashioned way that the old, beautiful musicals from the 50s did. And I adored it, and I think Emma Stone is a national treasure. I love her so much.
And she can sing, too.
Oh, my God. She can sing, she can dance.
I mean, yeah, Ryan she's awesome.
Ryan Gosling, likable guy.
Well, yes. How about White Christmas? Did you guys like White Christmas?
No.
Okay, I loved White Christmas. I love Sound of Music. Well, I love La La Land.
Sound of Music, yeah. But listen, if you don't like musicals, like my husband does not like musicals, and he fell asleep during the movie, I'm like, hello, how can you fall asleep? The music was wonderful. And he's like,
Mary, you saw it? Mary, you liked it?
I did. I loved it. Yeah. But I love music. I love dance. I love singing. You know, I love all that stuff. But he was gone. Of course, the seats were very relaxed.
Mary, tell me this. Were you not... After the first 5 minutes of La La Land, were you not just the happiest person on the planet?
Oh, yes, I was. And we won't say
number,
why, but yeah.
The opening number of La La Land, if you are not smiling from ear to ear and almost in tears, you have no soul. That's basically what it is.
So
I was going to ask, do I take my mom to see Manchester by the Sea or La La Land this
La
week?
La La Land, take your mom to see
I
that.
I think I got my
And
answer.
The colors are
well,
so pretty,
too. The thing is, it's good to have that problem because they're both great movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, whatever choice you make is going to be good. I preferred La La Land, but Manchester by the Sea is one of my favorite movies of the year, too.
Nick, I got to ask you, I was watching the bowl games yesterday. They kept showing trailers for Beauty and the Beast, which comes out in March, which I thought was odd, showing it during bowl games. How big is that movie going to be? What have you heard about it?
It's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. The live-action version of the animated musical that became a Broadway. Here's a weird thing. Animated musical from 25 years ago becomes a Broadway play, now becomes a live-action adaptation of the Broadway play that was once an animated musical. It's just getting... If you thought the Star Wars timeline was weird. I hear it's, you know, people are really looking forward to it. People love Beauty and the Beast, the animated film from 91. It was the first animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture, and it was one of the first full-length musicals that really made a lot of money at a time when musicals were pretty much dead.
Oh.
I can't tell you the number of people that I know, because I've done theater for many years, that are losing their minds over this movie.
Really?
It comes out in March. It's going to make millions and millions of dollars.
So if I don't like musicals, should I go see Beauty and the Beast?
I would say no. But that's okay.
All right. Nick D. Thanks, Nick. You're awesome. See you,
buddy.
All right. It's time for the Hawks Express, which is brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
The St. Louis Blues win the Winter Classic here at Busch Stadium in St. Louis by the final score of 4-1.
All right, that was it.
Don't belabor the point, you know?
I thought they had the game when they scored in the first, and that was it. They didn't do anything.
Yeah, it was ugly. I mean, Jake Allen was good.
We heard about Scott Darling's helmet. It was very baseball themed since they played at Busch Stadium. Corey Crawford, what was it? He didn't really have much. Why is that?
The pads were special for the game, though.
When they played at Soldier Field, the Penguins goalie had the Steelers. Corey Crawford didn't have the Bears.
Hey.
That kind of bothers me with Corey. I'm not going to lie.
Scott Darling is from here.
I understand that. But come on, man. Get in the spirit here. You're playing at a baseball stadium.
There's also, you know, the superstition kind of thing going in.
Well, it didn't help yesterday.
Well, it didn't.
Wait, what's the superstition thing?
You want to use your mask. You want to use every game.
Your own equipment. Yeah. 6:58 at 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Hey, Adam Hall.
Hi. Can you give us any insight into the plan?
Not really.
Meanwhile, the Bears trying to get back in it, and the false start. Tell you, the Bears are not putting their best foot forward. That's a huge understatement, but they're really not even involved in this game. A penalty like that after being trailing 17-0, not good.
Go Bears!
720 WGN, 7-11, Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Great news. This will be the last time we talk about the Bears this year. Well, maybe not.
I don't think so.
Our Bears Insider is brought to you by CJ Wilson Mazda. Let's bring in Adam Hoag. Adam, thank God this season's over. Adam?
Sunday.
There you are. How you doing, man?
I'm good, guys. Yeah, it felt really good when that game ended on Sunday.
Wow.
Not going to lie.
At the beginning of that game, it's like they didn't even want to be there. It's like, why are you even playing?
It certainly felt that way. I mean, they were kind of sleepwalking through the first half, and you know, I guess there's a little bit of human nature there, thinking about what's ahead in the offseason, but still, you got to finish strong, and I think it is disappointing to see the team finish the way they did the last 2 weeks, when, for the most part, they were competing pretty hard and playing hard, but... Not a good last 2 weeks of the season.
Matt Barkley, 7 picks the last 2 games. But Alshon Jeffrey, after the game on Sunday, said that the Bears will be in the Super Bowl next year. Do you agree with that, or is he on drugs?
Well, first of all, Alshon has a tendency to kind of mumble. So I was standing there holding my microphone up to his face, and he said that. And I go, wait, did he just say that? And I had to go back and listen to it just to make sure, because you never know with him. I don't know where he's thinking that's a possibility. Maybe he's going to sign with the New England Patriots in the offseason. Uh-huh. That's what he's talking about.
Will he even be back?
I think so. Here's why, Pete. I don't think they can afford to lose him.
Yeah.
If they lose him... then who do you have? I mean, you've already gotten rid of Brandon Marshall. Mm-hmm. You've already gotten rid of Martellus Bennett. You've already gotten rid of Matt Forte since this regime took over. Are they just going to keep subtracting every offseason? Jay Cutler moving on is a very real possibility. And even though people don't like him, he's still the best quarterback on the roster. And you don't know who they're going to replace him with. So how many steps backwards can you take on offense? I think at some point you got to stop that. And even if it's just a franchise tag again, I don't think you can afford to lose Alshon Jeffrey.
Well, who do you take in the draft? You have the number 3 pick. Who do you take?
Well,
do you go left tackle? Hampton told us left tackle yesterday, the kid out of Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's good. Cam Robinson. I like Jonathan Allen, who's the defensive lineman out of Alabama. And I think that's a very realistic pick because they need upgrades on that defensive line to help the pass rush. And I think where they're looking at possibilities at number 3, to me, at least what I've seen from the quarterback so far, that's too early for any of these quarterbacks. None of them's jumping out like Jared Goff and Carson Wentz did last year, or even Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota the year before. It's not really that type of year.
Right.
So I like Allen, the defensive lineman out of Alabama right now, just as an early favorite.
Adam, what are you expecting to hear out of Ryan Pace and John Fox tomorrow when they finally meet with you guys?
I don't know. I mean, what do they tell us anyway?
Well, they don't tell you much. I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is there's been all that talk about, you know, Vic Fangio and Fox were not getting along, and Dowell Loggins. I mean, you talk about the offense just kind of stalling. Me personally, just watching it as a fan, can't understand some of the calls he makes and just how he calls the game, to be honest with you.
Well, what I'm expecting And I could be wrong here because this is just a guess, and maybe they still are sitting there at Hallis Hall evaluating those two guys. But so far, nothing has come out indicating that either of those coordinators are going to be let go or move on. That could change today. But my expectation is that both are back. And I don't think that's what fans want to hear, especially on the Dow Loggins side. But that's what I'm expecting to hear. I think that they're going to point to the injuries. I think they're going to point to the numbers that John Fox has already sort of alluded to a couple times if you listen to his recent press conferences very carefully. The fact that they have gotten better even on offense in some certain offensive categories like yards per play, which does matter. And there are, you know, there's some validity to that. Despite the injuries that they have actually been able to move the ball for most of the season, they just haven't been able to get in the end zone, which is the point of football to
right.
score points.
That's always been our problem. Get in the red zone, Bears kick a field goal.
Right.
Yes.
Or Matt Barkley throws
an interception.
100
interceptions. And a triple coverage, yeah.
Well, he learned from the best, Jay Cutler. Adam Hogue, Adam, give me three bright spots from the Bears this season. We all know that number one is rookie running back Jordan Howard. What are the two others? If you were going to pick the top three bright spots from the Chicago Bears this season, what are they?
Yeah, I think that Cody Whitehair on the offensive line, I got a little bit of an argument after the game with the guys the other day. I don't think there's big of fans of Cody Whitehair as I am, but I thought Cody Whitehair, it was one of the best young offensive linemen in all of football this year. And so I think for a second-round pick, he provided tremendous value and is going to be a stud on this offensive line for a long time. So that's one of them. And then I think Leonard Floyd might be good. And that's like me really reaching right here because the guy couldn't stay on the field. He needs to get bigger. He needs to get stronger if he's going to withstand the rigors of the NFL for all 16 games in a season. But he did flash, and I think that with a full offseason program under the Bears' guidance, that he could be much better next season, or let's just say more reliable next season, because he already did show off the talent.
That's the problem with the Chicago Bears. Who do you root for on the team? They need a face of the franchise. We don't have one. If you asked just a normal person who's on the offensive line or the defensive line, they couldn't answer.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kyle Long, isn't it?
Right. And Kyle Long's your guy, but how long has he been injured? Last four games he's been out? Well,
he missed pretty much the whole second half of the season, and he played the whole first half of the season with a torn labrum. And look, I love Kyle. I think he's a great face of the franchise. He's a good role model. He's the guy they signed long-term and all that. But let's be honest, if your right guard is the face of the franchise...
You're in trouble, man.
Big trouble.
That's not good. That's not good.
Damn, maybe it's Jordan Howard next year.
Maybe, but he's pretty quiet. You know, he doesn't.
Of course,
Alshon Jeffrey is too, and he got voted a team captain. So, I don't know.
God, I just don't understand that. He's not a likable guy at all.
I think he's one of those guys that is to his teammates. He just doesn't really. He's not necessarily likable because of the way he talks to the media and portrays himself publicly.
Before you go, I'm married to a Packer fan, and it breaks my heart. It makes me so angry that the Packers are in the playoffs again. They find a way to win year after year. It drives me nuts.
Well, we have a lot in common because I am also married to a Packer fan.
Oh.
And I'm a Badger, too. So, yeah, it's...
Andrea just rolled her eyes.
Come on.
I'm married to a Packer fan, too.
Yes, Mary is, too.
Sick of the Packers. Enough of them. Mm-hmm.
I think there's more Packer fans in this town than people actually realize or want to admit.
Well, no one wants to be a Bear fan anymore. That's
true.
The thing.
As shown by the attendance the last few weeks.
Adam Hogue.
They have Aaron Rodgers. That's what this league's about, right?
Yep.
You have the quarterback.
You have a great quarterback. You can win.
You have a team that's flawed in Green Bay this year, and Aaron Rodgers decides to kick it into another gear. He says they're going to win out. They do. They win six straight games. They win the division. And now they look like a dangerous team in the playoffs.
How much do you attribute that to Olivia Munn? Second half of the season. She's beautiful, great actress. They're dating. Okay. Adam, don't even answer that.
Don't go.
I'll let you go.
Don't go there.
Parker Riddle
your Blackhawk tickets, yeah. Hawker Riddle, yeah, come on. Get your Blackhawk tickets, yeah.
We have Blackhawk tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks against Buffalo this Thursday, and you'll be entered to win four season tickets for next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. 312-981-7200. Here's your Hawker Riddle. Is it Hawker Riddle or Hawk Riddle?
Hawker Riddle.
I like the Hawker Riddle.
Hawker Riddle.
Riddle.
Yeah.
More. Here it is. Are you ready?
Ready.
I'm at four Chicago locations and one in D.C., a flat piece of beef with a non-fancy brie. The one below street level is a lower whacker trip. Don't ask for fried French, because all they have is a chip. Any idea?
Oh,
anyone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm at four Chicago locations, one in D.C., a flat piece of beef with a non-fancy brie. The one below street level is a lower whacker trip. Don't ask for fried French, because all they have is a chip. Okay. 312-981-7200. Okay. Let's get a winner. Everybody knows?
I got this one.
Too easy today?
Yeah. This was a good one.
It's a good one, but yeah. You got to think. Just think.
Okay, let's go to Eric. Eric, do you know the answer?
Yeah, Billy Goats.
Billy Goats is absolutely correct.
Chibaga, chibaga.
Nice job, buddy. You're going to see the Hawks take on Buffalo this Thursday, and you're entered to win four season tickets for next year, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Nice job, buddy.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, man. Hold on the line. Okay, there we go.
That was a good one.
Billy Goat.
Yeah. Billy Goat.
I love it.
When was the last time you guys were at the Billy Goat?
This year.
Last
2
year.
Weeks ago.
During the playoffs.
This year?
It's right
during
across the street.
Yeah.
You go down the steps, you're there.
This year's only 3 days
well,
old.
Well, okay. So this baseball season.
Okay.
I was here for the playoffs, and I was a little hungry, so I walked.
Right.
I walked over.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we go into a commercial, I want to talk. I missed The Apprentice last night.
Oh, I watched the whole...
Arnold Schwarzenegger is the new Donald Trump.
He is. I don't know why I did, but I watched the whole 2 hours of it.
2 hours?
I know. It could have ended in 1 hour, but they fired two people last night.
Man, I could not turn off the Rose Bowl last night.
What did he say at the end? Did he say hasta la vista? What did he say?
Do you want me to tell you?
All right.
Yeah.
Wait, I think we have the bite.
All right, here it is.
I think that Porsche, you've really put yourself out there. Even though you made mistakes, I was very proud of the way you handled yourself. And I really felt that, Kerry, you participated the least in the whole thing. You maybe have watched previous shows, and those that were quiet stayed on for a longer period of time, but that's not the way I handle things. Who is taking the most risks is really what it comes down to. So therefore, Kerry, you're terminated.
Oh, you're terminated.
Yeah.
Terminated.
I thought it was going to be
awesome.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Now,
wait.
Get to the chopper.
Thank you, sir.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper. But he fired Carney Wilson as well. And after he fired, you don't have the dude. After he fired Carney Wilson, he said, hasta la vista,
that's what
baby.
I thought
he's got too many lines.
He said,
too many
his line
I
is
like
going to be, you're terminated. But
you're terminated.
Yeah. But he throws in, with Carney, threw an hasta la vista baby. And then with Porsche, he said, get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
It is not a tumor.
No. Get to the chopper.
Thank you. Thank you.
Who is on this season that I like?
Oh, God.
Boy George, isn't
the only
he?
I have no time for him.
I would say the only likable one was Vince Neil and Boy George are pretty likable.
Vince Neil from Motley Crue?
Yeah, but the
is
two of
them. Is
he
bloated from drinking too much booze?
Well, yeah, they're bickering because they were in the studio and George is a recovering alcoholic and Vince drank four glasses of wine.
Of course.
And George said, I can't be around him.
Isn't there a housewife on there, too?
Yeah, Kyle.
So is it every Monday night, or is it going to move nights?
I think I'm hooked on it.
Well,
now.
The Bachelor.
I liked it.
You guys, The Bachelor was on last night, too.
I liked it, and I like Arnold. I think he's a little nicer than Trump. Trump was just kind of mean on The Apprentice.
The Rose Bowl was probably one of the best Rose Bowl games in the history of the Rose Bowl.
I agree.
Because it was so high a scoring game.
Nobody played defense.
No one played defense. There was no way I could turn that off last night.
It was like a Pro Bowl game.
They kept scoring. like crazy.
Are you kidding? The Bachelor was handing out roses, and you're watching the Rose Bowl.
I haven't watched it. Have they done any more after Andrew Firestone? That's the last time I watched.
I don't watch that at all.
Firestone.
The next minute of The Bachelor that I watch will be the first.
Wasn't Ryan the firefighter a bachelor?
I don't know. I've only been watching it like four seasons.
Andrew
now.
Firestone was 2005?
Oh. I think my guy was the fireman was, I think, before that. I don't even watch that show.
We have the big story coming up next. Crime in Chicago is now a national story again since President-elect Trump tweeted to the mayor yesterday. Andrea with details next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
It is 7:41. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran. Steve has bronchitis. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. By the way, Coach K from Duke grew up in Chicago, went to Weber High School, which is no longer around.
Which is no longer South Shore High School either.
Went to military school, West Point.
That's not South Shore High School either.
You laugh off mic. It drives me crazy.
I know. Sorry.
Because it fuels the fire. Our next guest, how would you like to have a job in the CIA? Can you tell your neighbors? Think about that. You can't tell people that you work in the CIA. A former CIA analyst who conducted the very first prolonged interrogation of Saddam Hussein. He wrote a book about it, Debriefing the President, the Interrogation of Saddam Hussein. It is John Nixon. John, could you tell people that you worked for the CIA?
Yes, I was an overt employee, so I was allowed to tell people that I worked there.
Gotcha. All right. You got to give me the visual of the interrogation of Saddam Hussein, because in my mind, you're in a dark room. You have a table with two chairs. You're in a basement somewhere. What's the visual, first of all?
Close, but not totally. We were in a guard hut, and we no table, and just like folding metal chairs or cheap plastic lawn chairs. And, you know, we just sort of sat in this sort of dingy, windowless room that had a plywood door. And we usually got in there first, and we set ourselves up, and then we would wait for him to show up. And when he came in, we would stand up. We wouldn't extend our hand. We would wait until he did that. And then we would get started.
How do you get information out of him? I mean, how does that work? Do you keep him up overnight? Is there a psychological tactic that you use? How do you get the information from him?
Well, to be honest with you, Saddam loved to talk. He loved to talk about himself. And getting information out of him wasn't that difficult. It was getting sensitive information out of him, or information that he didn't want to talk about. That was the trick. So we would basically, we didn't really have any carrots or sticks to offer him in terms of helping him with his legal plight at this point in time. But we appealed to his vanity and to his sense of history and his place in history. And I remember I held up some books and showed them to him. And I said, you know, in the West, people have read these books about you. And in it are some truths, some half-truths, and some lies. And this is your chance now to set the record straight.
And he just kept talking.
Well, we also told him that, you know, what he said will be read at the highest levels of our government. And I think that also appealed to him as well. But again, he liked to talk about himself. And he really, the first week that he was captured, nobody had come to talk to him. And he even said to one of his guards, "Why is nobody coming to talk to me? I don't understand this."
Did he like the fact, John, that people in the West thought of him as this ruthless dictator, or did he kind of perceive himself more as misunderstood?
A little of both. Talking to Saddam sometimes was like talking to a recalcitrant 16-year-old. You know, he sort of acted as though nothing he could do was, you know, he was so misunderstood, and nothing he could do would ever satisfy anybody, and therefore it wasn't even worth trying. But on the other hand, he also kind of helped purvey this myth of him as being a ruthless dictator, because that was part of his power, because, you know, people, he knew that it scared people, and that kept people from trying to do things that he didn't want them to do.
When you asked him about the weapons of mass destruction, what was his answer?
said he didn't have them. And see, this was a very touchy subject, and he knew we were going to talk about it.
Right.
But one of the problems with Saddam was that he was such a suspicious person, and he was always trying to evade on sensitive issues. He was always trying to evade the question. And so it created a sense of suspicion in his debriefer's mind as to this man's not coming forward, and he's not being forthwith with the information. And I can see how, in a broader sense, this kind of helped create this image of he's not coming clean. He's got to be hiding something.
So you thought he was hiding something, and you have to debrief the president and say, hey, listen, we talked to Hussein, and he said they have nothing. What did the president say?
Well, this was part of a process of talking to Saddam. By the end point, I was beginning to have some doubts, although I still kind of thought maybe there's something there. But then once I began reading the debriefings of some of the other principals involved in the nuclear program and just the evidence, the overwhelming evidence that said there was no weapons program and there was no intention of developing a weapons program, that's when, we sent the word back to Langley and to Washington. And the response was one of great disappointment and almost resignation.
John, when you see shows like Homeland, does that drive you crazy? Or is it kind of a good learning tool for us, for the public who really doesn't know a lot of the behind the scenes?
I have to be honest with you, and you're going to kill me for saying this. And certainly the producers of Homeland will say it, but I've never actually seen an episode of Homeland.
Oh, come on.
See, that makes me think.
John, just watch season one. Just watch season one.
It makes me love the CIA.
But the thing is, rarely have I ever seen any film or television treatment that really accurately portrays the agency at work. The only movie that I've seen in the last 5 years that I thought really captured an element of the agency was this film called Sicario. About drug wars on the Mexico United States border.
Really?
The Josh Brolin character is so accurate in terms of the sort of CIA operative. He has the mannerisms all down.
I love it. John Nixon, Debriefing the President. The book is available everywhere.
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you, John. Have a good day.
Well, thank you. You too. Bye-bye. All right.
WGN 751. Today's the day where we really kick things into gear and see if we can continue our workout and eat right. On the phone with us, she is a fitness trainer and health expert. It's Andrea Metcalf. Andrea, how are you? I haven't talked to you forever.
I know. I was so excited to see you were going to be on the show. I'm like, oh, this is serendipity.
I love it because, everybody is trying today. I went to the health club. I made the mistake. I did the show yesterday. I left at 10 and went to the health club. Oh, my God. There was triple the people, not double, triple the people there yesterday. I'm thinking to myself, what am I doing here? So I tried to get a small little workout in, then I left. Hopefully I'll go in an off time today. But everybody is trying to, lose weight, get in shape. What suggestions do you have for them?
Well, first off, good. It's great that people are thinking about this. That new year is like a reset. You can reflect. And the things that I want to tell you to do is, one, get to the gym and just do it. Or two, just start something simple with, like, walking. Like, we forget that's so important. 10 minutes before or after after you eat is a really easy way to accumulate that 30 minutes. But you got to make it fun. There's so many cool new workouts out there today that you can have a great time either dancing in the morning with, like, a daybreaker workout, or you can do something with, like, a color run. I have a new gym called Surfset. It's Hang 5 Fitness. We're on a giant surfboard, and I do these surf-inspired workouts. So there's so much fun things
Jeez.
To do. Get active and do something fun.
I mean, they have so many of those, and you can do everything online, and most of them, they're very minimal money, or you can find things on YouTube that people just want followers.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can just put in a new workout, flat belly workout, 7-minute workout, 8-minute workout, however many minutes you have, and pull up something great. There's some cool online stuff on trainerpass.com, too, that there's workouts that are only 5 minutes long, so you don't have to feel like you really want to get committed. And remember, even if you're doing 6 5-minute workouts, you're still getting in that minimum 30 minutes, so you don't have to go for a full 30-minute sweat.
Here's my problem. I use the Lose It app because I like to see how many calories I put in my body on a daily basis. Breakfast, lunch, snacks are fine. When I get home at night, I graze, and then we have a big meal. It's when I get home, it kills me.
Well, then don't go home.
Don't go home. Honey, Sarah, I'm going to stay at a hotel tonight, get room service, a little low-fat chicken breast. I'll see you in the morning.
See you in the morning. Well, I mean, I think having what you have on hand in your house really matters. You know, whether you have kids or you have a spouse or, like you said, you just come home, you start grazing. What you have in the kitchen matters. So stock up on those cut-up fruits and vegetables. Don't whine about the price. You probably pay more if you go out to dinner. And get the fresh stuff there so it's ready to hand. I mean, if you have those really cute fruit kebabs, you're more likely to grab that than, you know, the Tostitos on the shelf next to you or the Cheetos. It's how you prepare it and what's handy and ready to go.
Andrew, what do you think of the bullets and the Vitamixes, or how you juice, you know, and could you get more vegetables that way? Is that maybe a way to go if you want to try and start eating healthier?
Well, I think, you know, most people are like, oh, don't juice because it cuts down on the fiber. But let me tell you, the average American only has 2 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Not 2 servings of fruit and 2 servings of vegetables, 2 total. And you're supposed to have 9 to 11. So if a Vitamix, a bullet, if those things help you get in more of those antioxidants from the fruits and vegetables, that is totally cool with me. And maybe bump it up with some protein. Because we're all on the go, and not many people are going to sit down and eat their carrot sticks, you know, pull them out of their purse these days.
I am laughing because my wife is driving to work right now, and she knows that I'm going to ask this question. I am so worried about sugar, especially natural sugar with fruits. I look for sugar in everything. She calls me the sugar Nazi at our house, but sugar is hidden in everything.
Well, sugar is hidden in processed foods. Your natural fruits, the ones without a label that the government doesn't have to tell you that you should be eating these or not eating these, are perfectly fine for you. People freak out. They're like, oh, don't eat bananas. They're too high in sugar. Don't eat carrots. They're too high in sugar. Natural sugars, your brain needs to function. So don't cut out the natural things. Stop adding in the extra sugars. And that comes from a lot of processed foods. And remember, 36 grams of sugar a day is what you can have to kind of be on the safe side. So if you're going to count the labels, to me it's a little bit of craziness. Count the number of fruits and vegetables you have, and you're probably going to improve your diet tenfold.
Gotcha. Get rid of the chocolate, Darlis. Okay.
No, I know. That's why I asked about the Vitamix. If I could just throw it all in and blend it, I'd be much more likely
Vitamix.
To have fruits and vegetables.
Andrea, let me ask you a few questions. You have a few tricks for people that are headed to work right now, some things they can do at work. I know you always hear take the stairs, but standing up at work, that's a good thing.
Yeah, pace your calls. Anytime you're on a phone call, stand up. You know, of course, treadmill desks are becoming more and more popular, and under-the-desk exercises. I did this story on these people that did a QB underneath the desk where they were pedaling, and they all had little fans. They're like, the first guy bought one, and he lost 19 pounds in 3 months. Everybody else then started buying them. That constant activity really does help stimulate your brain to function better and burn a few calories. If you're burning 300 to 500 extra calories just by moving around more, who wouldn't do that? The other thing you can think about, too, is I don't really tell people to take the stairs in an office setting. I've got locked into too many stairwells. Just get up and walk to somebody else's office to talk to them instead of sending them an email.
Yes.
You know, walk to another floor.
Yeah.
It also breaks up your day, and you're not sitting for that 6 hours straight.
Move your body. That's what you want people
move
to
your
do.
Body.
Just move it around. Get up and walk a little bit.
I can just picture you moving right now.
Another one of your tricks is chewing gum, which I do all the time, but flavored gum to curb your appetite.
Yeah, and you know what else, too? It gives you fresh breath. You're more likely to not pick up those snacks if you've got gum in your mouth. You know, it's a real easy way to burn a few calories and stop yourself from eating. You never want to wreck the flavor of your gum and, you know, throw in some French fries. So just chew that gum. Make smart choices, ones that you could be proud of and tell somebody about.
It seems pretty easy, but we have to be reminded. Andrea Metcalf, what's your website? People can check out your help.
Hey, for more information, go to AndreaMetcalf.com. And January 14th, I'm doing a kickoff to Health Day with Chicago Women Magazine. I'm excited. So come on down if you need a free ticket. I can get you one.
I love it. Great to talk to you again.
Great to talk to you, Pete. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than when I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
8:11, the 8 o'clock hour is brought to you by Wintrust Community Banks. Let's bring in Dean Richards from WGN-TV. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Have we heard anything about the dual funeral? Is it happening this week with Carrie Fisher?
No details released yet. The brother of Carrie, Todd Fisher, and son of Debbie Reynolds, at whose home Debbie Reynolds was when she collapsed and passed away, said that there will be a double funeral, but did not give any details on it. They say that there will be a public memorial at some point, that the funeral itself probably will be private. And this is the weirdest part about this whole thing that I heard, that even though Debbie Reynolds owns some funeral plots in the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. Have you ever been there? Have you been out in Hollywood?
I haven't, but I heard it's fantastic.
It's awesome.
I know it's
a cemetery. We talked about this the other day.
We
talked about this the other day, that that she had funeral plots there. But apparently Debbie and Carrie are going to be buried in a different cemetery in Hollywood, where Liberace is buried, because Debbie Reynolds was a big fan of Liberace.
She was also...
And wants to be near him. She wouldn't want to be? I'm thinking that when I die...
Liberace.
Any of you are going to be involved in my funeral planning.
Dean, let me make a note. Hold on.
I would like to be buried near Liberace also.
Liberace.
Dean, I'll also be the one to tell your mother, too.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Well, Debbie Reynolds was in the Liberace movie with Michael Douglas.
Oh, she was. She she played Liberace's mother in that.
She was so good.
She's, you know, I'm a big fan. I've been watching... some of the old Will and Grace episodes with her in it.
Yeah.
Absolutely hilarious.
I love the I Told You So dance. Remember, I told you so.
Right.
The 2020 special that was on Friday, I've only seen half of it. I have half to go. But, wow, the body of work from these two women. I mean, you forget how good it was.
There was great stuff from both. And even though Carrie Fisher will forever be Princess Leia, of course, give me the mystery lady and the Blues Brothers any day.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely hilarious.
You're right.
With some of the scenes that she did there. I completely love that. Speaking of Will and Grace, by the way, it has sort of been confirmed that they're bringing Will and Grace back, which I've been trying to think of other popular TV shows that ended and then wound up coming back. You know, like a decade later, it's rather unprecedented. Leslie Jordan, the actor who played Beverly Leslie on the show, do you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, I love it. Little guy, Beverly Leslie.
Oh, well, Karen Walker. I thought I smelled gin and regret. That's my favorite line from
love
them.
That show.
Confirmed that they are definitely going to redo the show, bring it back for 10 episodes. They're going to start filming in the summer. So I don't know if that means it's going to be on in the fall. NBC has not had an official comment on it. I talked with Megan Mullally a few weeks ago, and she sort of hinted that it looked like it was going to happen, but didn't give me any official confirmation. But Leslie Jordan was in an interview, and he said that it's going to happen, and obviously he's going to be part of it. So,
what a great cast, too.
Right?
I mean,
such a funny show.
Yeah.
Still funny. Still funny. I mean... When they did that political spoof, I know.
Oh, that's right.
A lot of Donald Trump people didn't think it was funny, but it was. But it was really funny, and showed these are not characters. You didn't watch it and say, "Oh, they're all too old now." It's changed. It's not different. It's as if 10 years hadn't gone by.
Right.
They all seem the same, and some of the lines in that were hilarious too. I think it was Jack. Who had said, why opens the refrigerator and says, why does everything look like it's 10 years old in here?
I love the inside jokes.
Yeah.
But a popular TV show that comes to mind is The Love Boat. Remember when The Love Boat came back with Robert Urich as the captain? The reason I bring this up is because I starred in that second edition of The Love Boat.
I think that's what most people remember, that.
Thank you.
The reboot.
You did? Or,
well, I didn't actually star.
You were what, Isaac's backup?
Dean, you remember that episode where I was just sitting at the bar. And
I've
the
got
girl,
them all memorized.
Girl was trying to pick me
up. Got all the Love Boat episodes memorized.
Oh, you were
the
guy,
next
guy
wave.
Name any line, I'll give you the next line.
Guy
the next,
you were guy at bar.
The next wave,
guy
by the way,
bar.
when my episode aired, was they canceled Joanne, the show.
Was Joanne Worley in that?
Yes. In Charo.
I was going to say, where's Charo?
Yeah. Charo. That was the episode.
I got to say, those were my Love Boat favorites. You see a Joanne Worley come up that ramp, you knew it was going to be a good Love Boat.
It was a big one.
Yeah.
But Carrie Fisher's daughter finally spoke out. I'm going to check traffic, and we'll talk about that in a second. Okay, Dean?
Sounds good.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Top man, pro and steady.
We're talking with Dean Richards from WGN.
Does anybody know if John DeCoste did my theme song live?
Why do you ask?
At the New Year's Eve show.
Oh, the New Year's Eve show.
I went to the first one, Dean.
Yeah.
I didn't hear him, but he teased that he might be doing it at 6.
Mm-hmm.
So I can neither confirm nor deny, but pretty much deny that he did it at 6.
My visual is John DeCoste as Will Ferrell on Saturday Night Live playing the organ with the singer, the church singers.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite.
Is that what he looks like when he plays? Carrie Fisher's daughter.
This is what I figured. My visual image is John DeCoste in the middle of the stage, and he's got like 20 like super hot leggy dancers behind him with bald skin caps on, glasses. All
I like
dressed,
that.
Dressed up like me.
The Deanettes.
Yeah, like the gold diggers. Remember for the solid gold dancers.
Sure.
You know, something like that. But they're all dressed up like me, and John's singing the theme song while they do the Dean dance
with the Mariah Carey plumes, like the feathers,
right.
sifting back and forth.
John lip syncs the song and loses his place.
Wait a second. We're gonna get to Mariah in a second. Todd Fisher was on 2020 Friday. If you haven't seen it, watch 2020 on demand, because Debbie Reynolds and Carrie Fisher, they go through their body of work and just their relationship. It's just very, very good. So Carrie Fisher's daughter finally spoke out. I was waiting for this.
Yeah, her name is Billie Lord. And she issued an Instagram yesterday saying, receiving all your prayers and kind words over the past week have given me a strength during a time I thought strength could not exist. She says, there are no words to express how much I will miss my Abba Dabba, which I guess is what she called Debbie Reynolds, which I looked it up just to see if that meant something. I don't know if it was just a cute grandma nickname, but it turns out Abba Dabba is a song that Debbie Reynolds did in a movie. I think the movie was called Give Me Love, but the song was Abba Dabba Honeymoon.
Aww.
And it's kind of like a cute, a childlike sort of song in it that I have no idea if any of this is true, but I'm guessing that she sang this song to her little granddaughter because it's a childlike song.
Love it.
And that's why she became Abba Dabba, as
maybe
completely untrue, but is my guess. And she also said how much she'll miss her one and only Mombi. I guess she called Carrie Fisher Mombi. She said, your love and support mean the world to me. So very, very sweet on that account. Very interesting on another account on the Carrie Fisher front. Disney could wind up getting a $50 million insurance payout because of Carrie Fisher's death.
Oh.
They took out, I guess they do this with all the actors when there's a big movie like this involved.
Wow.
They take out insurance policies that if for any reason the actors are unable to complete their contractual obligations, or for whatever reason, they get the insurance payout. Carrie Fisher dies on Christmas Day. Disney is now likely to get the largest ever single-person accident insurance claim.
Look at that.
If this happens. Neither Disney nor Carrie Fisher's people have commented on all this. But
Billie Lord doesn't get any of that, right, Dean?
I don't think so. No, that's Disney, because they They've already completed episode 8, Star Wars episode 8.
Right.
So that was in the can. But episode 9, Carrie Fisher was supposed to be featured as Princess Leia in episode 9. Obviously, well, not now. Changes the plans. Changes. I guess there's a certain amount of money that's been invested into all of that. But anyway, it was Disney that took out the insurance policy to protect themselves against actors who might not be able to complete their contractual obligations. So we'll see if that winds up happening. This whole thing is so weird, isn't it?
It's so weird, but with CGI now, I feel like we're going to see Carrie Fisher in all the Star Wars movies.
Well, didn't we see a young Carrie Fisher in Rogue One anyway? Didn't we see one of the actors from the original Star Wars?
Oh, yes.
Spoiler alert, I guess.
The guy that died in 1994.
Grand
Moff Tarkin.
We saw a guy who died like 22 years ago. They brought him back to life. So I guess they can pretty much do anything. Which, when I'm at that Liberace cemetery, I would like somebody to do that for me.
All right, let's
Whoever
talk.
Whoever's going to plan my funeral, these are the two things I want you to work on.
I want to help.
Dean, let me add it to the list
Add that to the list, Andre, because you're going to outlive us all.
I write down.
Okay,
perfect.
Dean, we got to talk Mariah, because I've watched it 4 times.
There's something oddly wonderful about it, isn't it?
It's just, I didn't think it was that bad.
I did. Oh, I did. It's embarrassing.
Well, she's walking on stage. Well, you explain it if people haven't seen it.
She was supposed to perform a couple of songs on the Dick Clark Rockin' New Year's Eve with Ryan Seacrest. And she comes out, and apparently her earpiece, she had recorded, pre-recorded some tracks to which she was going to lip sync, and apparently couldn't hear out of her earpiece. That's what she said, that the earpiece was intermittent, so the sound was coming and going. And the result of it was just one of the most awkward performances, in parentheses, train wrecks, that you've ever seen of her, kind of like sometimes singing along, sometimes not lip-syncing along.
Just talking.
Talking to the audience. I'm going to let the audience sing. And she holds the microphone to the audience. Meanwhile, the dancers, her dancers, apparently they can hear everything just fine because they're
dancing.
They're dancing up a storm and in beat and in sync and everything. And Mariah's the only one that's this seems to have eluded. A war of words has now broken out between Mariah Carey's management and Dick Clark Productions, the producers of this whole show. They're saying that Mariah didn't show up for a sound check. Mariah's people say that she did show up for the sound check from the side of the stage, but somebody else stood in for her doing the dance moves, that she didn't actually do the full, like a full rehearsal with the whole thing. And then Mariah Carey's manager gets into the fray yesterday and is saying that Dick Clark Productions tried to sabotage her for bigger ratings, that she was the biggest star there, that she did it for free. They begged her to come on the show and, that she benevolently did it for free. Never mind that, she was also wanting to plug her new reality show that's about to start, which, if someone was skeptical, might say that this whole thing is for that reason.
Oh.
That this, that all we're talking about for New Year's Eve now is Mariah Carey.
Right.
As a new reality show is about to start. So this could be, if somebody was skeptical, I'm not saying that I am, but I'm just saying that that possibility exists. But the manager says she should have just walked off the stage and thrown a microphone at somebody's head.
Oh, please.
It would have been poetic.
It's more cuckoo as the day goes on. So.
And New Year's Day, I was watching the Rose Bowl. Was such a great game yesterday because it was a shootout. But Andrea was watching Celebrity Apprentice. I forgot all about it.
I don't know what was wrong with me, Dean. I sat down. I
curiosity?
Thought I actually wanted to know what he was going to say, what his phrase was going to be.
What the catchphrase was going to be.
Yeah, so yeah. I got hooked watching.
All right, another spoiler alert because we've already gotten some complaint emails because we've shown this on TV. So if you don't want to know, you don't want to know. But it's not that hard to figure out. Here's Arnold's catchphrase talking to Carney Wilson, who was one of the contestants.
Carney, you're terminated.
Oh, what a shock.
Hasta la vista, baby.
You're terminated. Hasta la vista, baby.
And then for the first one, he tells her,
Thank you. I'm going to the chopper.
That's new, isn't it? Where you go to the chopper.
Yeah, he fired Porsche in the first hour, Dean. He said, get to the chopper.
Oh, Porsche got terminated in the first hour.
Yeah, he got...
How long was this?
It was two hours.
Oh, good Lord.
Sorry, I missed it.
No. Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper.
Thank you.
I'm going to be... You watch next season, I'm going to be president.
The chopper, they drove away in a car.
Oh, wait.
In the past.
Porsche didn't get fired. It was the other... I can't think of the girl's name. She's a blogger, a YouTube person, but it was between her and Porsche. Porsche threw her under the bus. Carrie something is her name. She was the first to go.
No idea who you're talking
about.
Yeah,
all right. No, sir.
Right. Thank
now,
you, Dean.
You may as well be Vladimir Putin speaking to me in a blog somewhere.
Dean's memorial service.
Yeah, include that there. I'd like Vladimir Putin at my funeral.
Putin there.
Pollutant.
Yes.
All right. Putin pollutant at my funeral.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Dean Richards, WGN. We're following the shooting in Turkey. ISIS has claimed responsibility. Andrea with details in the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Panic from the right boards. Makes a behind-the-back pass. This sets up the Blues the other way. Into the hot zone. Down the slot. They score! It was Tarasenko on a give-and-go kind of a play. Robbie Fabry back into the hot zone. Here's Tarasenko. Left circle. Shoots. He scores! And now the Blues have a 3-1 lead. Dean fires from there. He scores. For Alex Dean, that's his first goal in 13 games. And that should put this one out of reach. The Blues lead the Winter Classic 4-1 with 1:14 left in the third period.
Yeah, that was a rough one yesterday. It is 8:40. The 8 o'clock hour is brought to you by Wintrust Community Banks. The Winter Classic, I think a huge success, 46,000 strong. Let's bring in the sports director at Fox 2 in St. Louis. It's Martin Kilcoin. Martin, good morning. How are you, sir?
We're good. We won the cup, right? Is that what happened yesterday?
It would seem like that, but I love the Winter Classic. I love that it's outdoors. It's a huge event, but you're right. People think that you win the Winter Classic, you win the cup.
Well, and I think because it's Chicago and you guys have had all the success, it meant a little more to Blues fans, but it didn't take long. I mean, almost immediately, any positive thing that was said on Twitter about the Blues grabbing the Winter Classic, People in Peoria were tweeting at me saying, where's your silver chalice, pal? So I don't want to overstate what it was. It was a great event. And, you know, for people in the media to say, oh, it was an awesome spectacle, that's one thing. But when Brett Hull says it was one of the greatest weekends of my life, that's saying something.
Well, having Wayne Gretzky play in the alumni game, we talked to a lot of Blackhawks alumni last week. They were so excited for the alumni game. They didn't care about the outcome of the game. They just wanted a picture with Gretzky.
Right, and I think having watched that game up close, I think Wayne was just there to take pictures. He didn't really seem – he's the only one who didn't wear a helmet on the Blues side, I think, which was an indication of his compete level. But just seeing Gretzky out there, of course, I mean, there's just magic. How many people walk around their whole life and they're identified a certain way? It might say under our name, you know, former governor, talk show hack. His says the great one,
the
wherever
great one.
He goes. They just put under his name, the great one. But he only played 18 career games with the Blues, but he lives here on and off because Janet Jones, his wife, is from here. So, I mean, it made sense that way. We had Martin Brodeur in goal. I think he played 3 games as a Blue. We may have stacked the deck a little bit on Saturday.
I think you did.
You did.
And, Mary, you were down there over the weekend, right?
I was. And one awesome thing Gretzky did is he was there for the alumni game. Then he flew to Toronto for the centennial game that was played outdoors there.
Toronto, Detroit.
Yeah, and then he came back, and he was back in St. Louis on Monday at the regular game. He went there, so he really wanted to be a part of the whole weekend of festivities, he had said.
I'm wondering if he is on the league's payroll, and I'm not saying that sarcastically. I mean, he should be, because he is just the face of hockey, and people...
He is.
Even in the corridor, you're walking around, somebody's like, is that... I mean, he's pretty recognizable, too, and you're like, is that Gretzky? And, you know, there's just that aura around him, but for Blues fans, I mean, it's a long-suffering fan base. I think NBC, even in the Opens, compared it a little bit to the Cubs. Blues fans, I can tell you, for years would say, we're not the Cubs. We're always in the playoffs. We don't win, but we're not the Cubs. Well, now we have to say, yeah, you're not the Cubs because they've got a trophy.
What did Duncan Keith say about the ice, Andy?
He actually said that it was the best ice he's played on in an outdoor game. This is the fifth time the Blackhawks have been outdoors since Duncan Keith's been around.
Yeah, the players didn't have any complaints. I mean, I think the rain, the morning, I mean, you worry about the game and the competition level. I also thought for the fans, it kind of stinks. A lot of folks dropped $200-$300 on a ticket. And 9, 10 a.m. yesterday, it was pouring down rain. So that part of it stunk. But the league, I got to say, as much as we pick on the NHL and get things wrong, I mean, they got it right. They nailed it. I mean, it rained before and after that game. And you're right, the people that do the ice work and there's so much logistics. You see that whole layout that they're tearing down as soon as the game ends?
Right.
Unbelievable event. NHL did a great job. St. Louis is buzzing about it. And part of it is the Cardinals and the Blues have a certain synergy. The ownership group, their friends, when the Rams left and kind of gave the city the middle finger, those two got even closer together. And this was really about the Cardinals and Blues partnership.
I was complaining about the rain because my hair gets frizzy in the rain, but every fan I talked to, because I was out talking to some fans, not one of them cared about sitting in any rain at all. They were just excited to be there. That stadium is really nice. Like, it is.
And I don't think, in this fan base, I mean, it's a weird history, and I know you guys had the GOAT and fires and everything, but with the Cubs, but the Blues have had a lot of weird things happen. One of their best players fell off a golf cart and was injured. Manny Legacy was the goalie, and they had Sarah Palin out for some ceremonial puck drop. Don't ask me why. It's a checkered past. But she walks out. They roll out a blue carpet. The goalie steps on the ice, tripped over the carpet, and he's out for the game. So they've had a lot of weird things happen, and for once, everything just sort of went right.
Martin, how do they cover the ice when it rains? I mean, in baseball, you bring out a tarp. Is there a tarp over the ice? What do they do?
No, I think it's more like ice maintenance, whether it's people out there with squeegees or – I honestly don't know because they said there's no drainage underneath. It's not like a baseball stadium where you just let the rain wash off. I think they just maintain it. Also, the temperature on there, I guess. They said on late in the week, somebody from the NHL said, hey, we can freeze rain. We're not worried about that. We can't freeze a lot of rain. But you're right. We were saying that there is no rain delay in hockey. There is no tarp
right.
And organ music. I think they got lucky. I mean, that window was perfect for them. But the players, there didn't seem to be any beef about the ice. I think maybe early on it negated a little bit of the Hawks' speed and their skill. Probably, if we're being honest, it probably hurt them a little more because they're so skilled. But if that's what it takes, I mean, we'll play the Blackhawks outdoors in April if that helps.
Beat them in the playoffs. Andy.
The weird thing, Mark, was the fact of all these contingency plans. If the game was tied after two periods and they couldn't complete the shootout, then the shootout would have been picked up and finished in Chicago in the United Center February 26th.
Right. I think yesterday morning we're all rolling through these. And people were saying, you know, in baseball, it's an official game if you go five innings. And hockey, who knew? It was an official game after two periods. The Blues have played like that at times this year, that it was over after two periods. But I didn't realize all those rules they had in place. I'm glad it didn't come down to that. I think it's a great event. I don't know why the league had two of them on the same weekend, because there were some former Blues like Brendan Shanahan and Curtis Joseph that were up there representing Detroit. Even Chelios, I think, was in Toronto over the week and then made it to the game at least on Monday. But hard to complain. We pick on the NHL a lot. They used to be called the Garage League, but this was pretty
right.
Well done.
Well, let me ask Mary first, and then I'll ask you, Martin, because I've been to Wrigley Field when they played outdoors. Mm-hmm. I was at Soldier Field. The buzz behind the scenes was off the charts great. How was it, first of all, Mary, at Busch Stadium?
Oh, it was great. The fan base, both, I thought it was, you know, everyone was really, I took a lot of pictures of Hawks fans and Blues fans together. A lot of friendly rivalry type attitude as far as what I saw. And a lot of lines in the bathroom, so I think there was a lot of drinking going on.
Martin?
Yeah, I would say heavy drinking. You know, we do our TV reports at 5, 6 o'clock. By then, people are long gone. If you go into those men's restrooms hours after a sporting event, I mean, it looks like savagery. You know, I mean, the cans and bottles that are everywhere. But I think the rivalry has softened a little bit. I mean, you guys know the old days at the Chicago Stadium or going to the arena in St. Louis. If you wore the opposing jersey, I mean, you were going to get beat up. It was just like a known fact. So that has calmed down quite a bit. And I think even the players, there's a lot of mutual respect. They don't say hate as much as they used to. I mean, I think back in the day, we hated Al Secord, no offense. I mean,
right.
We hated Probert. I don't think you have that anymore. I think when the Blues players talk about Taves and Kane, they're kind of in awe.
Well, I had Roenick on last week, and he said if there's one franchise that I still hate to this day, it's the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, the older players. And even on Saturday, players like Kelly Chase said, we did not want to lose to the Hawks. I'm like, you guys are like 50 years old. You're skating in slow motion. I think for the older players, that still is true.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what they have? The Blues do this thing where every time they score, they have a T-shirt guy that, like, whips his arm back and forth. One, you know, and then at the alumni game, I thought his arm was going to fall off because right. they scored eight times. So one, two, three, each time they score, he does it and then throws a shirt.
They call him Towel Man. I don't know how many years he's been doing it, but Towel Man, yes, may be out with a rotator cuff injury this morning.
If you're a player and you're skating in front of 46,000 people, that's got to be such a high. I mean, they have to love it.
Yeah, and that's what, I mean, again, as somebody who covers the game, hey, that's pretty cool. But if you're somebody who's played hockey your whole life, and they all say, you know, they grew up in Canada playing pond hockey, but to look out there and to see 46,000 people watching your hockey game, and I think for a lot of these guys, too, they're proud of the league and the game, and they're always wondering, when are we going to get to that next level? Well, it's not on par with the NFL or baseball, but I think for that one day, they feel like their sport is, in fact, in the Super Bowl. To a man, I think the players talked about that, just the whole experience. The weird thing, the Blues goalie, Jake Allen, said it was much easier to see the puck because you don't have fans right behind the net, he said, down the sidelines. He said for him, it was the easiest game he's ever had seeing the puck.
I guess that makes sense. Martin Kilcoyne from Fox 2 in St. Louis. Thank you, Martin. Great to talk to you.
Did Cochran really bail out? He saw the Hawks lose and called in sick?
Oh, yep.
He sent me a text yesterday like at 3:30 in the afternoon. Oh, and I read it like this. Oh, I'm sick. I can't come in.
Yeah, I know Steve pretty well. He's one of those guys, he groans when he stands up and he groans when he sits down.
Nailed it.
That is so true. Martin, have a great day. Appreciate the time.
All right. See you guys.
All right. .720 WGN 855. Thanks again to Martin Kilcoyne from Fox 2 in St. Louis talking about the Winter Classic. Andrea loves to bring up the fact that we took that picture when it was 40 below on the lakefront.
Oh, well, we did the broadcast. Remember, it was me and Cochran and you and Bill and Wendy, and we did the broadcast for a couple hours beforehand, the pregame. And they had who knew, right? They knew they had faced the tent toward the lake. Strangely, because it was kind of like this complex, you know, that you walk around and it's family friendly and people were coming in, except that the doors to the tent, the flaps kept opening.
Yes.
So there was piles of snow. So you and I snapped a selfie and then we actually went to the game, I think, and took more pictures. And it was so much fun.
It was freezing,
but
no one cared because it was such a great time.
Yeah.
It's a hockey game outside.
It was so much fun. And the snow was just piling up and piling up and piling up. And I said, we should take a picture of Sandberg because she had texted and said, oh, it's an exciting day. It's a great day. It's 50 degrees. I think she said 55 at one point.
So 55 said, in St.
We'll
Louis.
We'll put our pictures next to each other. You and me, like, buried in the snow, and Sandberg with her Mai Tai and her.
Did you go to Wrigley when they played the Red Wings?
I did, yeah. Remember, that was the first time I discovered that they have the warmers.
Hand warmers, that's
right.
That
you can use them for your butt and your feet.
Wrigley was fantastic, too.
It was great. It was
hanging
great.
Out at the bars, and then you go inside. Unfortunately, the Hawks lost that day, but
it was fun. And then they had all the Cubs ambassadors there, too, on the ice.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Williams.
They did the
Sandberg.
The second intermission stretch.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, my God. I forgot all that stuff. Yeah. That was a great game. Mm-hmm. But these are events right now, and it helps the NHL. I think it's still good. I don't want them to get rid of the outdoor games.
No. You know, and the thing that the NHL is capitalizing on is the lack of bowl games on New Year's Day anymore, because college football has kind of gone away from
you're right.
the tradition of New Year's Day bowls, and the NHL basically owns New Year's Day.
Yeah,
you're right. Yesterday was the event for the Winter Classic.
Yeah,
a few bowl games, Wisconsin and the Rose Bowl.
Yeah,
that was what was the total points in the Rose Bowl? About 120.
It was 52-49. I was told there'd be no math today.
52-49. That's crazy. And speaking of the NFL, I mean, you know, it's playoff time. Who are you going to bet on?
It's a good question.
Who are you going to bet on? Save it.
Okay.
We'll have an expert on right after 9 o'clock to talk about just that. Okay. It's 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Roaming left, Rodgers gets by Griffin, takes it himself to the 10. He's to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown!
Snap to Rodgers. Under pressure, scrambles left. Buying time, sets, looks, flushed again, rolling left, throws end zone, diving grab, Geronimo Allison, touchdown Green Bay Packers.
Aaron Rodgers in the shotgun, and the snap. He looks, lofts, left side of the end zone.
Yes! Devontae Adams makes the over-the-shoulder catch. Is it a touchdown? Yes!
9:10 NFL playoffs start this weekend. Who do you bet on? We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. Joining us is the former odds maker at Caesars Palace, now co-host of Bet the Board podcast. It's Todd Furman. Todd, I am married to a girl from Wausau, Wisconsin. She grew up, born and bred, a Green Bay Packer fan. It drives me crazy that the Packers are in the playoffs again.
So she gets full custody of Wayne Larrabee these days.
It's still hard
for a native Chicagoan like myself, who didn't grow up as a Bears fan, to hear him yelling and screaming for Aaron Rodgers. Let's just leave it at that.
I don't know a lot of us remember that, but the new kids don't. They don't. We grew up listening to Wayne Larrabee do Bear games.
No doubt about it. I remember Sunday afternoons driving back and forth from hockey practice in Chicago, listening to him yell and scream about Jim McMahon and other quarterbacks whose names will quickly be forgotten.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Packers are the odds-on favorite right now to win the Super Bowl. Is that right? Or the best bet right now?
No, the Packers are actually listed as the third favorite. They're in a little bit of a logjam behind the likes of the New England Patriots, who come in as the top overall favorite, listed at 7-5. The Dallas Cowboys, of course, the number one seed in the NFC, priced at 4-1. And the Packers, along with the Steelers, find themselves in that 8-1 or 10-1 range. But they have definitely been the team that's created the most buzz, given the fact that you could have had Green Bay at about 80-1 to win the Super Bowl when they were mired in that four-game losing streak.
I may be the last one to the party, but I've been in, I got into a survivor pool this year where everybody gets a team and the last one standing wins. And now they have them for the playoffs, these survivor pools. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, for sure. And it's all about strategy and trying to figure out when you can use those bad teams, so to speak, saving the NFL blue bloods for the optimal opportunity.
Wide receiver, Bears wide receiver Alshon Jeffrey said after the game that the Bears would win the Super Bowl next season. You're a former odds maker at Caesars Palace. What odds would you give the Bears today?
If Roger Goodell was going to allow Alshon to bet, I'd be happy to call my colleagues down on the strip, tell them that we can offer about 100-1 on the Bears, and still feel pretty confident that they didn't have the pieces to get to the big game next February.
No, they don't have anything.
He actually said that they are exactly like New England, save a few plays on offense here or there.
He did not say that.
Yeah.
Alshon must have trouble counting that as well, because that must be about 50 to 100 plays minimum. Now, to the Bears' credit, they do have the NFL's second-leading running back in Jordan Howard they can build around. The problem is you need a lot more than one player to try and get yourself to the Super Bowl.
Who's the NFL MVP this year?
You know what? When you look at the way the numbers have set up, Matt Ryan was one of the biggest movers, and I really think he's going to get strong consideration above Aaron Rodgers, but those two guys have to be the favorites, in my opinion. Dak Prescott, I don't think, will end up getting the award, nor will Zeke Elliott. But, hey, we've seen weirder things happen in the past. Guys, keep in mind this. Zeke actually listed as a bit of more of a long shot to win the NFL Rookie of the Year, whereas Dak Prescott has kind of slid into that race with him. Both of those guys, you could have had at serious long shot odds.
Let me ask you about those two guys in particular, and what goes into the odds making for the playoffs when you consider that the two skilled players for the Dallas Cowboys are both rookies?
Yeah, it's going to change the dynamic quite a bit, and it'll be a real question for NFL writers and the voters. Do they want to try and give the hardware and such a prestigious award to two players who may more or less split the vote and have really helped one another's candidacy? We hear all the talk all season long about the Dallas Cowboys offensive line and how that's really made them what they are.
Right.
I still think we're going to be talking about two veteran quarterbacks in the form of Rodgers and Ryan competing for NFL MVP this season.
I mean, there's so many teams that you love to hate, but I love to hate the Cowboys. They showed Jerry Jones the other day before the game walking on the sidelines, his long trench coat, big sunglasses. I just can't stand the Cowboys.
The NFL is just better, though, when you have those classic villains to hate.
You're right.
It's no fun picking on the Cowboys when they're finishing seasons 3-13, 4-12. So whether you love them or hate them, they will definitely get the ratings as we talk about the NFL playoffs and moving into the divisional rounds.
And I think it's better for the NFL if you have teams like the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers that have such an old rivalry, if they're two good teams.
And I don't think anybody will argue that point with you, especially when we see the ratings that we'll get Saturday afternoon for the much-anticipated matchup between Brock Osweiler or Tom Savage for the Texans against the most likely starter, Connor Cook, for the Oakland Raiders. I have to think most people couldn't name a lot of those key contributors on either roster. Let's put it that way.
So your top three picks, Pats, Cowboys, Packers, who would you take personally?
You know what, if I'm looking at that trio, I just think the Patriots have the easiest road. And I know the numbers aren't going to get you rich by any stretch of the imagination, but knowing that they're going to take on a real inexperienced quarterback in the divisional round, and then the winner of most likely the Steelers and Chiefs in the AFC Championship. I think the Patriots are more or less a formality to get to Houston. When you look on the NFC, that's where I think you could have a bit of a surprise, and if we're trying to find some value, the New York Giants, who don't have an easy road but priced at 20-1, I think they make an awful lot of sense there given their playoff pedigree.
20-1. Why wouldn't you bet the Giants? And this is the NFL playoffs, which means Bill Belichick will be wearing his sweatshirt with the cutoff sleeves.
Yep.
It's all about wearing the hoodie. The real question is, if the Patriots get back to the Super Bowl, what kind of prop bet odds you can have on gray, red, or blue being his color of choice in 2017?
Todd Furman. Todd, what's your website? People can come and see you.
They can check out my site, toddstake.com. Of course, you mentioned the podcast, All Things NFL Gambling, from now until we crown a Super Bowl champion, at bettheboardpodcast.com. We'll get people in the right state of mind to make a few bucks during this NFL postseason.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys. You as well.
Todd Furman, how would you like your job to be betting on the NFL or advising people to bet on the NFL? What a great gig.
Yeah, you know, because those casinos are not in business to lose. You know, and they yeah. You know, obviously Vegas wasn't built on winners. You know what I mean?
He gave the Bears 100-1. I think that's kind of low.
It should be 1,000-1.
It's just very, very low. It's 916, 720, WGN, and live on CLTV.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Hello, Chicago. If there is anyone out there who still doubts that America is a place where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our founders is alive in our time, who still questions the power of our democracy, tonight is your answer.
We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. That was President Obama in Grant Park in 2008. Chicago, he confirmed Chicago, Monday that he'll deliver his historic farewell address at McCormick Place on January 10th. But how do Chicagoans get tickets? Joining us from WGN Radio and ABC News, it is Ryan Burrow. This is the weirdest thing, because we've been trying to figure this out all morning long. How? I would love to see a president in person.
Sure.
I've never had that in my entire life. I'd love to see
regardless of which party, everyone wants to see the president, right?
How do you get tickets?
Well, you're going to have to go in person on Saturday to McCormick Place to pick up a ticket. One per. You can't go down and grab one for all your friends or all your coworkers and hold on to them. It's one per. So they're being pretty strict on it, but that's the policy. That's the way they've set it up.
So you go to McCormick Place, you park, you pay $35, and you get the free ticket.
Wonder right? How that works, right? Yeah. I guess you could take the public transportation, maybe. I don't know.
And the exact time of when there you can get the ticket has not yet been released.
Yeah, I don't have that.
So we don't even know that yet either.
No, we don't know that. Here's what I can tell you about the distribution of tickets. And this is kind of what we've seen on the Trump thank you tour is people given free tickets with an online registration. That did not necessarily work out well in many situations. People went and got tickets and maybe didn't show for one reason or another. They also had perhaps some people who did not like Donald Trump getting tickets and saying, well, I'll show him by having a big empty crowd. We know what happened at UIC Pavilion when a lot of protesters picked up a lot of tickets and managed to pack the UIC Pavilion back in March with about maybe a third of it was demonstrators. So maybe this is just a way to kind of keep the riffraff out as best as possible, and a way also to assure that the people who are going are Chicagoans, you know, the people who helped get him to this point, because chances are if you're in D.C., if you're in California, you're probably not going to fly in over the weekend to go to McCormick Place to pick up your one ticket to go to the event that's going to be on Tuesday.
It's so hard to get to McCormick Place. I mean, you got to go down Lakeshore and you got to turn in and go through the deal and then you go downstairs to park. I mean, it's a huge pain.
Yeah, and even if you get off on 18th Street now, you still have to go underneath and
right.
Then up again and then find the parking garage.
So
it's
a bit of a thing, yeah.
People have to go get the ticket. They have to do that on Saturday to get the ticket, and then they have to come back on the 10th for the speech. Now, here's the question. Where is the speech going to be in McCormick Place?
It's huge, right? It's massive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have. Did you see anything? I haven't seen anything specifically on where it was. Now, my question to you.
That's a great question.
And Andrea, I was not here and I was on the 2012 reelection. I was actually out on the streets. Mm-hmm. Were you in McCormick Place for that?
I was at McCormick Place. It was fascinating. It was wonderful. I mean, just to see a president, as you say it, in Grant Park, too, on election night. So cool. I mean, I would really encourage people to see this. If it's the president, he's giving his farewell speech. It's in Chicago. And then I think we're probably going to hear a little bit. He'll probably give some sort of an indication, don't you think, Ryan, of what his political future will be like or what he'll be doing next. I think he's going to stay in Washington for a year
or two. That's what it sounds like, because he's one of the daughters still has to wrap up high school, and it sounds like they're gonna stick it out in Washington, D.C. But then what? You know, he's got the museum being built up in Chicago. There have been talks about him maybe going to New York and you know, setting up shop there, much like the Clintons did with a foundation, something of that nature. But we don't know. Still a big question mark from the Obamas.
I've been to the auto show. Are they going to put grandstands inside back to McCormick Place? Because I want the visual of where he's going
to
be. Because
I have to tell you,
it's so massive. They have to put up grandstands somewhere.
Well, yeah. The nice thing about a hall is, and I've seen this kind of on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton, with Donald Trump, with Bernie Sanders, with all of the candidates, is a hall you can kind of bring in and bring out as much as you need to. If you've got a big open flat space and you've given out a few thousand tickets, you can maybe bring it in, make it look more compact. If it's massive, you can keep extending. So maybe this gives them the flexibility to find out how many people are going to show up on Saturday to get the tickets, how many people will be in. And we know it's not just going to be people off the streets that are going in. We got a lot of people who volunteered with the campaigns.
Sure.
2008, even back to the Senate campaign run, I would think, who are probably going to be heavily involved. I would assume the mayor's going to be there. I would assume we're going to see an Arnie Duncan. Mm-hmm. I would assume that Valerie Jarrett's going to be in attendance. So, you know, all the Chicago people.
A lot of aldermen.
And maybe even some people from Springfield as well.
It'll be a political who's who for sure.
It will.
But that's a great point. I could see them doing that too, like Ryan said, expanding out. Because like I was telling you before, when I was at the Javits Center on election night, that facility is similar to McCormick Place on a smaller scale. But I was surprised they built kind of this makeshift stage and then had I would have thought they would have had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people. It was more intimate. It was set up to be more intimate.
And the problem that you have in one of the places that had been bantered about as a possible location was the United Center. But the problem you run into,
I was just going to ask that question. Oh,
yeah. This is the problem that Donald Trump ran into, though, at some of his thank you tours, is it's very evident where the open seats are. Right. You know, if you've got a lower bowl that's only half full and you've got the upper bowl that's not being used at all, it's very evident how many either no-shows there are or tickets were not given.
Right.
That was one of the problems that Donald Trump ran into in Cincinnati, where everyone's tweeting out these pictures of all these open seats. Now, you put it in a situation like a convention hall where everyone's standing on the ground, maybe a couple risers, you know, and you don't really get a good determination of how many people are there, but it looks crowded. So
it's a great point.
It's optics. It is.
Plus, too, flying into – I mean, that's where he lands. That's where his helicopters land when he flies into town.
Yeah,
so it's probably
right.
Easier for him to land there. And he lives in Hyde Park. So.
Sure. You think he's going to spend the night there?
I would think so. Do you?
I don't know. How much mail's been building up? Who's been picking up the mail?
I hope the neighbors have been picking it up.
Wait, Michelle, what is this? I mean, what's Mariano's? I don't know. Where did all these Dominics go?
He's representing Chicago, president of the United States. Two terms. He's coming back to Chicago. His farewell speech. This is a big deal. I'd love to see it, but I'm not driving to McCormick Place. I mean, I'm just not going to do it.
You can watch it live. You can stream it.
It's better
you can
on
watch
HD,
it on TV.
Right? Yeah. This is interesting, though, because, you know, when you go back, and pretty much every president during the television era has done this, the farewell speech. George W. Bush did it. Bill Clinton did it, you know, dating back to Ronald Reagan and even beyond. But this one's going to be in front of a live studio audience. So that's what's going to make this interesting. Not in the comforts of the White House with the picture of the wife and daughters in the background.
Right.
This is going to be among the people that got him to this point. And, you know, it's a thank you and also a look to the future. So we'll see what the tone is as well with him and Donald Trump.
So what time on Saturday do people go to McCormick Place and try to get a ticket? Yes. And it's one ticket per person. We don't know.
One per person. I didn't see exactly when that was.
I know. Isn't that funny? The event will be. You know, even with the press credentials, too, we're going back and forth. Like,
we kind of know, sort of. We don't
sometimes
really know.
These things are done kind of on the fly as well. They've got to move some pieces into place, but we knew we got a tip off a couple weeks ago that he was looking at doing something in Chicago. We didn't know if it would be out in the frigid temperatures of Grant Park. That would have been interesting. But
I'm glad it's indoors.
It could have been. It could have been rainy like today. It could be sub-zero temperatures like he did when he announced he was running for president.
He had to do it in Chicago. I'd be upset as a Chicagoan if he didn't come back here and do his farewell speech.
Oh yeah, you knew.
But
he
the
would.
Question is this the last time we're going to see him in Chicago for a while? You know, so that's the question. But. Who knows?
It'll be exciting.
Ryan Burrow, thanks for coming in, man. Good to see you. Ryan Burrow from WGN Radio and ABC News. It's 929 live on CLTV and 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I got me a firewife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
939, we're live on CLTV, 720 WGN and WGNRadio.com. Let's bring in Orion again. Orion, the Rose Bowl yesterday, one of the best bowl games I've ever seen because it was such a high-scoring game, but I had a chance to finally watch a little bit of the Rose Parade, and I can't believe how floats and the parade has changed over the years. And you covered the parade yesterday.
Covered the parade, attended, and co-hosted the coverage of the parade for RFD TV. I think this is about the fifth year I've done it, and even in 5 years, there have been changes in the floats, but just a couple of interesting comments on the history that's involved in this Rose Parade. It started in the 1880s when we had no motorized floats, we had no trucks or tractors. Everything was done by horsepower, and so it was known as the Horse Parade, and it still really is a very much horse parade with the riding groups that attend. But that's the reason, and I keep getting this question, why didn't they play the Rose Bowl and the Rose Parade on the 1st of January? Well, they made the rule back in the late 80s when they started that they would never hold the parade on Sunday, because they were concerned church bells would spook the horses that were appearing in the parade and pulling the floats.
Sure.
And that tradition stays to the 2000s.
Wow. I mean, times have changed from the tissue paper and the trailers with the floats. They're just enormous. I couldn't believe it yesterday. How they've changed.
Well, did you see the one with the surfing dog?
Oh, I was just going to ask you about that, Orion. Look at that picture. There were two dogs on a surfboard.
Yeah. What was that?
Yeah. Probably the most appreciated float in the parade, because everybody was watching the dogs go back and forth.
It's so
but
funny.
That float was 88 feet long, and I think, I haven't heard the final results, but I think it set a Guinness Book of World Records for the heaviest because of the water that they had in the pool on the float,
okay,
and the longest. So it's...
Just imagine a flatbed truck with a very long pool in the middle of it, and the dogs are surfing across, and there's a guy waiting, and the guy pushes them across again on the surfboard, two dogs.
They have little life jackets on, too.
Okay, good.
Yes, right.
For those who are worried.
Even though it was probably 2 feet deep.
Yeah.
Got to have life jackets on just in case. Beautiful
parade.
But you
know, one block after the start of the parade, it makes a right turn, a sharp right turn, and can you imagine the challenge that they have navigating those floats, because the driver of the floats is sitting in a tiny cockpit. All he can see is a pink line in the road, and he watches that, and he keeps centered on that. There are walkers out on either side at the front of the float, and they guide him by radio as well, but that's really what he's the only thing he sees in the entire parade. And the people, oh my golly.
I was going to ask you, how many people attend that parade, Orion? And how many people are in the parade?
That I've never seen. I know how many people work in putting it all together, because they organized the Tournament of Roses Association in 1895, and more than 935 volunteers, and they all wear total white suits, so we call them the white suiters, and they just run everything. They put in more than 80,000 hours of manpower in putting it all together, and it's all done by volunteers. And then when you get to 3 or 4 days before the parade itself, every 8 hours they bring in busloads of people, high school kids and senior citizens, and they sit there, and in many cases, I've watched them do this, they will take petals of roses and stick them on the float, and everything needs to be from a live plant. You can't do anything artificial on the float.
You're kidding.
And so, no, nothing at all.
700,000, they say, Orion. 700,000, give or take, and then 28 million people watched on TV. around the world.
I would guess. Oh, yeah. It has a tremendous audience. There are five different channels that cover it, including one from Mexico. The other thing that really impressed me is the size of the bands. I don't know if you noticed that, but some of these high school bands had 400 players involved. And it's always fun to watch them make that right-hand turn to see how straight they keep the lines, because those closest to the turn, all they do is step. They don't move, and the outside has to really move to keep up with the band. But it runs 5.5 miles, and they have bleachers along every mile of the parade. It must take them a couple of months to set up for this entire event and then tear down. I mean, the minute we moved off our booth, they were tearing it down. It gets taken down that quickly. But probably the worst traffic I've ever been in leaving the parade.
Well,
sure. We got there like at 5 in the morning because we had to be there to set up and work with the cameras and stuff like that. But leaving the parade took us about 2 hours, I would say, to go 1.5 miles. So
that's just brutal. But you expect that because you're there year after year. But if you think about the two most popular parades, of course, Rose is number one. Number two, Macy's. So you have to top yourself every single year. What's it going to be? Like the dog float this year or something. So the planning starts tomorrow, doesn't it?
Planning starts tomorrow, and there are three or four companies that spend the year designing and putting the floats together. Other interesting note about the float, since the parade started back in the 1800s, they have built an expressway over the parade route about 0.5 mile from the end of the parade. It's a 5.5 mile parade. They put an expressway in, and so every float in the parade must drop down to an 18-foot height to go under the passway or the expressway and then immediately raise itself again. And I talked to one of the white suiters a couple of years ago, and because it adds a lot of cost to a float. You have hydraulics that take it down and put it back up. And I asked one of the white suiters a couple of years ago, I said, why don't you just end the parade at 5 miles instead of 5.5? And he looked at me and he said, tradition, tradition. So it goes the full 5.5 miles. And I don't know if you saw the giraffe yesterday. I thought the giraffe was one of the good floats, and some of the mechanics on it were great. But anyway, that float probably was 40 feet tall, and it's got to come down to 18 feet and then right back up again.
That's crazy. That's just nuts.
That is weird. Orion, wanted to ask you your thoughts on kind of a shift here from Rose Parade to planning as far as the next stages of the Trump administration. What are your thoughts on Donald Trump's candidate to head the Agriculture Department, the former governor of Georgia, Sonny Perdue?
Well, he's not on my top list. The man on my top list is Chuck Connor, who is president of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. And probably even higher than that on my list was Governor Terry Branstad of Iowa. I've known him for years, and of course he's had a 30-year relationship with the president of China, and so I'm very pleased with the fact that he has been named the U.S. ambassador to China. I think that's a very good move. But it took him off my secretary list. At this point, like with everything else with President-elect Trump, he'll probably surprise us. As a matter of fact, there's a lady by the name of Annette Sweeney whose name has suddenly appeared. And I really don't know her that well. But I guess we'll wait, because I think this cabinet position will be the last one named, which kind of follows the rule of the political campaign. Neither candidate talked about agriculture, and so I think we're at the tail end. They forget nothing, even the Rose Parade yesterday. I said at one point, agriculture is the basis of this parade. Everything on the parade floats comes from the soil. It comes from the beginning, and same way with everything else. But I'm prejudiced, of course.
It's a wait and see with President-elect Trump. Orion Samuelson. Orion, thanks for coming on, man. Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, and see you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Sounds good. It's 9:48. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
9:50. Bill and Wendy are back from vacation. Looking forward to hearing them today. Steve is sick. Hopefully he'll be back in saddle tomorrow. Pete McMurray live on CLTV and 720 WGN. We forgot to talk about resolutions today.
Yeah, we did.
We all have our resolutions written down. We're going to try to get through the week.
I think, yeah, I've gotten through the week with one.
Well, today is day two. Did you drink yesterday?
I wanted
to give up drinking.
Yeah, I did. I had a glass of wine at the end of the night because here's why. I told you this, and you said this was okay. I just said I was going to give it up for a month, and then we had your friend the dietitian in last week.
Yep.
And she said just do whatever your goals are. Do it for a week. Well, last night
7 day challenge.
7 day
Dawn
challenge.
Dawn Jackson Blattner.
She's fantastic. Yes. Give it up for a week. So I was going to give up wine just because it's a lot of calories. You know, it's a lot of sugar. We were talking about sugar before too.
Red wine is good for your heart.
I know that's what they say. But here's why I needed a glass. Because yesterday I had to watch my godkids. They're 4 and 5, and I bought my goddaughter the Barbie Dream House.
Mm-hmm.
Putting that together.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. I had to watch a video on how to put it together, and thank God I watched the video, but the kids are hilarious. They're like, oh, this snaps here, this snaps here, this snaps here. I went, no, wait. Oh, yeah, you're right. They had the pool installed, which the pool attaches to the garage. It's a
Can't
dream house,
Can't you buy the floor model? You walk up to a clerk and say, I want to buy the floor model. Give me 10% off. I'll take it out right now.
It's
there were
so big,
700 pieces to this.
Andrea would have had to have her top down. But it's funny. I was watching on social media the amount of people that bought Barbie dream houses that didn't get parts, like the kitchen floor and things. And so they were showing, like, calling their husbands on the phone with Barbie Dreamhouse support, and they're like, we're going to overnight you the kitchen floor. Like, it doesn't always come with all the pieces.
I had the opposite problem. I put it together. I had one piece left. It was a little silver bar.
In your pocket.
I did.
I hid it in your pocket.
I bet that
away.
Goes somewhere in the hinging.
And you know what the funniest thing is? It has...
Now it doesn't hinge?
No.
Maybe it's a mirror.
No, I think it goes under the flat screen TV. Because the flat screen TV is basically you take your phone, mom's phone or dad's phone, and you put it in. And so it was so funny. They have this giant 50-inch flat screen on the wall, but they wanted to watch the TV, which was their phone, in the Barbie dream house, which serves as the flat screen.
How big is
Hilarious.
This? Because when it's my huge. Sister had one, I want to say it was maybe 3x3.
No, I'm going to show you a picture
big.
Of this.
They're
back
really
in the day.
Big. And you know what? I've got an issue with that you just pointed out, Andrea, that your phone has to be in it for them to watch on the couch. I don't like any of these kids' toys where they require using our phones. Because I know last year, Patrick.
You
got
to buy him a phone. But then you have to have electronic time.
Last year, he was 8 and he had this racetrack with cars, but the cars were controlled with phones. So if he and a buddy came over, somebody had to hand over an iPad and a phone to make the thing work. And I don't want a toy where I got to hand over my phone.
It's got to be 4 feet tall.
It is 4 feet. I'm looking on your phone right now.
And that's
now.
Not even completely together.
Wow.
That's why I needed the glass of wine.
And it's easily 4 feet.
She paid like $4,000 for that Barbie dream house.
How much?
I was texting Pete. I texted you too.
She's like,
I need to find this.
I go, I have an 11-year-old boy. I'm not in the market right now.
Yeah, but you guys know
you're the best aunt in the world.
She really is.
You're sweet. Yeah, I put the, but yeah.
What about the dad? Couldn't he help you?
Yeah.
Well, I had to watch the kids because their dad had to work.
You had to watch Mom's the kids and assemble the dream house.
Oh, like, I would have needed more than wine.
That?
You know what else I did, too? I ate McDonald's yesterday.
Oh, I don't have a problem with that.
They wanted a Happy Meal.
Did you get an
meal.
Egg McMuffin?
I got a chicken.
Oh, you're two for two in the resolution.
I know.
Out of everything on the menu, you get a 4-piece chicken nugget.
I got 3 Happy Meals.
Oh, what was the toy?
Yeah, what was the toy?
Oh, it's the thing from Sing. It's the elephant from Sing that sings. But
I love the elephant.
Oh, Mary, you'd love this. It's motion, so every time you walk by it, the elephant starts to sing,
which
is cute for about 5 minutes. But every time you walk past the thing, it starts to sing.
Have you seen the movie?
No.
I kind of got choked up. I kind of got choked up when the elephant sang at the end.
Oh, I'm going to give you... I got a toy elephant for you.
Yeah, it was nice.
I dropped the kids off to watch Sing while I went to yoga.
That's sweet.
And Patrick said, I can't believe you're going to miss this movie for yoga. And I'm like, oh, I think I'm okay with it.
So they're okay to sit in the theater by themselves?
Catherine's almost 13.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
So she was actually trying to pitch me on dropping them off at a PG-13 movie, but she's not quite 13. And she's like, I can just tell them I'm 13 and I'll bring Patrick in with me. But I don't think it works that way.
It doesn't.
No. I felt good about that way. So they went to sing. And
God, the thing we do for kids and our nieces and nephews. Yeah.
Oh, I did make an error, though. I bought the tickets online. And I guess my Fandango home theater is in the city. And I was taking them to the Glenn Theater.
Oh, no.
And so they sat in their assigned seats. And then somebody came up and said, those are our seats. And they had the tickets. They're like, oh, you're supposed to be at a theater in the city. Thankfully, they moved them over two seats.
But Sing wasn't sold out.
Catherine is texting me like, we're in the wrong seat, you know, theater. Sends me a picture of the
now,
city.
Wait a second. Like, there's assigned seating in the suburbs?
Yeah. It's Arclight. Those theaters, you pick the seat.
Really?
I guess if you buy it ahead of time. I don't know if you buy a ticket there. I always buy ahead of time. So I'm not sure. But they knew they were in like 6 and 7, but then, you know, it was a big commotion. Patrick made it seem like it was a really big deal, but they just had moved one row back. So, but he was all thrown off because he was already settled with his popcorn.
I went to Manchester by the Sea, of course, a very sad movie, but I brought a potbelly sandwich in. I snuck it in my coat.
Are you kidding?
Because I didn't want to have popcorn. So my wife is crying. I'm opening up my turkey sandwich and she's looking at me like, really? Right now? During this scene?
You brought I'm hungry. In to the movie theater?
I do all the time.
Mike went and saw that movie. I wonder if he smuggled in a Chipotle burrito because that's what his go-to food is.
Right.
Did you?
I don't have a problem with that.
Nah, too sloppy. I've attempted in the past.
The potbelly's perfect. You got two sides. Get some peppers. You get a Diet Coke there. You're still helping out the theater. You're buying your tickets.
But if you go with the wreck or something, that's a very greasy sandwich.
You can't. You got to prepare.
The paper gets like see-through.
I don't know what's funnier, that they both brought food into the movie or that they both went to see Manchester by the Sea. Cheesy.
Terribly depressing movie.
Did you cry while you were eating the sandwich?
Oh, I cried. Sure.
Did you cry, Mike?
No, no tears. I almost got choked up with Sing, though. I saw Sing, too. That elephant will get you.
That elephant at the end, man.
I'll tell you.
She belts it out. God.
Tori Kelly is the voice of the elephant, which I was dying. I was listening and watching the movie. I'm like, who is that that sings? It's that Tori Kelly. She's got a great voice.
That's because he's a sound guy, so he's thinking. You know,
but Nick D is right. Sing is just a little bit too long. It's about 40 minutes too long.
I think Mike said Manchester whatever was too long.
Yeah, Manchester by the Sea, a little bit too long. I liked it. A little too long.
Pat and I finally watched Sully the other night.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. That too. I finally saw that too.
I'm catching up.
Last week.
All right, let's take a break. We'll talk to Bill and Wendy live on CLTV and 720 WGN.